broadcasting from the beautiful campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR, Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Well, good morning to you. It's another Radio Vault. You knew that, right? And let's quickly go over our menu of stuff so you know what's coming. It's light and lively on the Tuesday show. We're going to kick it off with a full hour of the Jack Benny Show. A couple of episodes from 1941. One of the episodes, Jack Benny doesn't even appear on. Then we will hear an encore performance of W.C. Fields in the Lux Radio Theater presentation of Poppy. Lux Radio Theater, of course. If you've been paying attention on this program in the past, is all about feature films of the era. And W.C. Fields was quite a notable in the world of comedy entertainment. For hour number three today, Fibber McGee and Molly. From 1938, same year that Orson Welles did War of the Worlds, we'll be hearing an episode of Fibber McGee and Company, actually. Molly was ill, so they renamed the program Fibber McGee and Company. So, on this episode, Fibber continues as a theater manager. And the whole episode is around a new arrangement of Kiss Me Again from May of 1938. And then I bet you didn't know that the voice of Porky Pig and Bugs Bunny also had his own radio show. We'll be hearing an example of the Mel Blanc Show. It only lasted for a season or so. But we will hear that during hour number three on today's Radio Vault Extravaganza. So if you're ready, background sounds, Jeff Lorber Fusion. From his CD called Philly Style. Well, let's get to the opening track here from January 19, 1941. It was during a time when Jack Benny was sponsored by Jell-O.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with On the Road to Pismo Beach. Was On the Road to Pismo Beach, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to announce that last Monday, a great and well-deserved honor was bestowed upon our illustrious master of ceremonies.
Oh, Don, do you have to tell everything?
For many years now, the outstanding stars of Hollywood have been selected to inscribe their footprints in the forecourt of Grauman's Chinese Theater as a tribute to their supreme artistry.
Don, please, I'm so flustered.
So without further ado, I bring you the latest celebrity to achieve this great distinction, Jack Benny.
Thank Thank you, thank you. Jello again, this is Jack Benny talking. And Don, your introduction was awfully sweet, but I wish you hadn't brought the subject up. It might make people think I'm hammy.
Well, Jack, it was a grand tribute, and I feel that our listeners should know about it.
True, Don, but it makes me feel so darn uncomfortable. Now, I really didn't want you to mention the honor accorded me at Grauman's Chinese last Monday at 2 p.m. before a crowd estimated by the police at over 3,000. I mean, it happened, it's over, now let's forget it.
But, Jack, there isn't the slightest reason...
Now, Don, there must be other things to talk about. So, let's change the subject, shall we?
Now, just a minute, Jack. There isn't the slightest reason why you should be embarrassed over this wonderful compliment.
Well, maybe so, Don, but
still... Mr. Grauman must have thought a lot of you to suggest adding your footprints to such a distinguished group.
I know,
why,
but...
Why, Jack, a great artist like you should realize...
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Hello, hello. What's that, Don? A great artist like me should what?
How are you, Mr. Wilson?
He's fine, he's fine. Sit down. I should realize what, Don?
You should realize that... Oh, darn it, I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, you had it on the tip of your tongue. Concentrate. I should realize what...
Now, let's see...
Hiya, Jackson. Are you on the beam tonight?
Quiet, Phil. Don is trying to think of something. I should realize what, Don...
Oh, it slipped my mind, Jackson. We might just as well forget it.
Well, that's a fine how-do-you-do. Don, we were talking about me putting my footprints in the cement in front of Grauman's Chinese Theater.
Oh, yeah, I read about that. You know, Jackson, this was a big week for the both of us.
What do you mean?
Well, at night school, I received a great tribute. I got a gold star for spelling.
Oh.
Congratulations, Phil. That's terrific.
That's swell, Mr. Harris. Congratulations.
Thanks.
I think that gold star was footprints. So you're an honor student, eh, Phil?
Yeah.
Why can't I play Carol Lombard's part?
She wasn't in the picture.
That's what I mean.
Mary, you're either going to be madly in love with me or infatuated with the May Company. Now, Phil, you're going to be Eddie, my kid brother, a frail artistic sort of fellow whose only interests are his books and his great love of music.
Yeah?
Yeah, you're high-strung and delicate, Phil, and your forehead suggests deep intellect.
Yeah, yeah.
You grow up to be a great composer and finally conduct your own symphony at Carnegie Hall.
At last, the part that fits me.
Phil, it's just that we're stuck. That part fits you like a mail-order suit made by a nearsighted tailor for a couple of other fellas. Now, Don.
Yes, Jack?
You have one of the most important parts in our play. You are the narrator, and you symbolize the spirit of a great metropolis. In fact, Don, you are New York.
He ought to take a little weight off his Bronx.
You said it. Now, this play, ladies and gentlemen, will go on immediately after a number by Phil Harris and his orchestra. Now, Phil, how about playing... I'll take it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
I'm sorry, Rochester, I'm busy.
You're going to be busier than that. I'm quitting.
Quitting? What's the trouble now?
It's about that mechanical man Mr. Billingsley made.
You mean the robot?
Yeah, he's breaking up everything in the house. You know that big grandfather's clock we got in the hall that runs so good?
Yes.
Well, Tempest has fused it for the last time.
Oh, my goodness, that clock was very expensive.
I tried to stop him, but he whammed me right on top of the head.
On top of the head? Why, that robot is made of iron. Did he hurt you?
I won't need collars no more.
Well, look, Rochester, I told you before there are buttons on that robot to control him. All you have to do is sneak up behind him and press the buttons.
That's how I got my neck shortened.
Now, Rochester.
Just call me Turtle.
Now, Rochester, I don't want that mechanical man roaming around the house. Where is he now?
He's in the kitchen. I think he's that way about the electric refrigerator.
Now, that's just silly. A robot has no emotions or feelings. He hasn't even got a personality.
He has now. He's wearing your toupee.
Well, take it off of him. Now, Rochester, this is no time for joking. I'll be home right after the program. Meanwhile, tell Mr. Billingsley to keep that robot in his own room.
Okay.
What was that?
My neck just came out. So long, boy.
So long. Play, Phil. I wish Mr. Billingsley would take a trip somewhere on his magic carpet. As You Walk By, played by Phil Harris and his Sunset and Vine Orchestra. Sunset meaning they are playing right here on Sunset Boulevard, and Vine meaning they are just clinging to their job. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our sensational melodrama, City for Conquest, curtain, music.
Our scene, ladies and gentlemen, is New York. New York, the greatest metropolis in the world. Millions of people gasping for life and air, fighting, biting, clawing away for a place in the sun. New York!
Gee, that's wonderful.
And now, we take you to the East Side. The attic room shared by Danny, the truck driver, and his brother Eddie, the young musical genius. As the scene opens, Eddie, with an inspired look on his delicate face, is seated at his drum, composing his Symphony of New York. Listen.
No. No, I still haven't got it. I don't feel that ending, but I can't give up. I must finish my symphony. Ah, I have a thought. That's it! Now I've got it! Oh, that's it! That's the voice of New York!
Hello, Eddie. How's me kid brother?
Oh, hello, Danny. Why aren't you working this afternoon?
Me boss started an argument, so I slugged him. And a couple of cops came along and I slugged them, too. I slug everybody.
Oh, Danny, you're always fighting. Will you ever pick up good manners by yourself, or do I have to learn you?
It ain't no use, brother. I'm just naturally tough. How's your symphony coming along?
Oh, I fear the masses will never like it. It's much too highbrow.
Let me hear what you've done so far, will you, brother?
Very well. I call my composition Manhattan,
Allegory. Manhattan Allegory. Let's hear it, brother.
All right. I'll start with the part you like, Danny. The part I call East River, with all its proud and passionate beauty, with all its shrieking jungle cries for life and sun.
Gee.
And I carry on the theme until I've told the complete story of New York, with its wealth and power and everlasting loveliness.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Let's hear it, brother. Oh, that's beautiful. Beautiful. I can see it all. The Empire State Building. The tenements downtown with the laundry hanging out.
Georgia winter. Oh, boy. And there's Central Park in the moonlight. It's winter and the snow is falling. And that's the winter garden kid. Holy smoke. Folsom and Johnson are still there. Oh, Eddie, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Eddie, you're a genius. What's that cowbell for?
Well, that symbolizes the burning of New York. You know, when Mrs. O'Leary's cow kicked over the lantern.
That was Chicago. Oh, brother. That's got nothing to do with New York.
Okay, I'll take it out.
But otherwise, it's beautiful. I can listen to that forever. Oh, hello, Peggy.
Hello, Danny.
Get that girl out of here. A composer has no time for women.
Hmm. Well, Eddie, at least you can say hello to me, sweetheart.
Hello, Eddie.
Hello, babe. What you doing later?
Eddie! Hello is enough. Gee, you look pretty tonight, Peggy. Is that a new skoit?
Yeah, this is a new skoit. Is that a new shoit?
Yeah. This is a new shoit. How do you like my shoit?
Too toyed around Detroit.
Well, so much for dat.
Say, Eddie, how's your symphony coming along?
Gee, Peggy, you ought to hear it. Gee, it's beautiful.
Beautiful, yes. But who's ever going to hear it? Where will I get the money to complete my masterpiece?
Oh, he's so high-strung.
I might as well tear it up. I'll never achieve my ambition. Never, never, never.
Poor kid, he's so sensitive.
Also unbelievable.
Yeah. But don't cry, brother. I'll get you the money. I know what I'll do. I'll be a prize fighter. There's a lot of dough in that.
A prize fighter? Oh, don't do that, Danny.
No, no, Danny, you mustn't. You'll get your nose broken.
With all this cement in it? Don't be silly. Your music belongs to the wild, Eddie, to the wild. And I'm gonna see that Dave gets it.
Months pass, and Danny the truck driver becomes Kid Samson, the sensational newcomer to the ring. After an amazing series of knockouts, he is now the leading contender for the championship of the world. We now find Kid Samson in the gymnasium, training for the big fight.
One, two, one, two, one, two, one, two, one, two, one, two. How am I doing, Eddie?
Oh, Danny, I wish you wouldn't fight.
I'm doing it for you, brother. Hey, Lefty, you think I'm in good shape now? Yeah, but now listen, kid. This guy you're fighting tomorrow night is plenty tough. And you got to know how to handle him. Don't worry, I'll moiter him. Now, don't be too sure of yourself, kid. The champ's got a habit of leading with a satin portrait, and he's liable to hit you with a saddle raise a severed button. Watch yourself. Oh, yeah. I'll remember that. And when you duck, he comes back with a little saddle force. Watch out for that cast of sorcerer. You know, he's liable to file you with a saddle force to centigrade to the kidneys. I'll watch out for that. I'll get in close. Now, look, you can't be too careful. I remember in Chicago, he was fighting a guy in a saddle faucet.
Yeah?
1, 2, 3 to face. He stood back with a cat.
Traffic syndrome?
Get him in a saddle faucet, Saturday, eh? He brought him his state, the reach. I've seen him. Okay. Maybe you're right. Give me a rub down, Lefty. I don't know where that bottle of alcohol is.
You don't? It was here yesterday. Where is it?
I broke it. I can't stand alcohol.
Oh, for Pete's sake. Hey, what's that sticking out of your hip pocket?
That's for after the play.
Give me that. Here, Lefty, rub me down. Now, look, where do you take your shower? There's no use salivating brushes, is there? No, I'll do it later. Well, look who's here. Hello, Peggy.
Hello, Samson.
That's Kid Samson.
With gray hair?
That don't make no difference. I'm as hard as nails. Get a load of this chest and feel these muscles.
Where?
Right there on my arm. Look at that bulge. That's a muscle.
Where? I don't see it.
Right up. Now you scared it. It's gone. Well, I gotta leave you now, Peggy. I'm gonna get me rubbed down.
Gee, Danny, you ought to get some new trunks.
What's wrong with these I'm wearing?
They're so long, I can hardly see your garters.
They're all right.
Say, Danny, who are you fighting tomorrow night?
The champ. And he's one of the toughest mugs in the ring.
What's his name?
Dennis Killer Day. That guy's dynamite.
Oh, Danny, I know you're doing this all for me, but I can't let you go through with it. Give it up, Danny. Please. Please.
Oh, stop crying. Stop, will you?
I want my rubbing alcohol.
All right, here. Come on, Lefty, let's go. Pull up your trunks, kid. I want to tie your shoe. Oh, yeah. They are a little droopy.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Clem McNulty coming to you from the ringside of Madison Square Garden. We're about to witness the championship fight between Killer Day, holder of the title, and Kid Sampson, the contender. The killer is already in his corner. And here comes Kid Sampson, nervously pulling his trunks up. Whoops! He stumbles. He's up again.
Darn, these trunks, they are too long. Get me suspenders, Lefty.
Now, before the fight begins, we'll have a word from each of the contestants. First, Kid Sampson, the challenger.
I'll moiter him.
And now the champion, Killer Day.
I'll get killed.
Come on, let's get going.
The referee's just given the boys their final instructions. They're standing in their own corners, nervously awaiting the bell. And there it is. The boys meet in the center of the ring, and Killer Day leads with a right to the jaw.
Ooh.
I'm sorry, Mr. Benny.
Watch it, will you? I got me glasses on. Wait till I take them off.
Kid Sampson removes his glasses. Ooh. And counters with a left to the referee. He can't see a thing without him.
Oh, yeah? Where's that killer? I'll moiter him.
Kid Sampson is staggering around, and Killer Day is moving in for a knockout blow.
Ooh.
The killer throws another one.
Ooh.
And another one.
Ooh.
And another one.
Ooh. Ooh.
Kid Sampson is down, and it looks like a knockout.
Ooh, let me at that guy. I'll slug him. I'll moiter him.
It's too late. You're in your dressing room.
Oh, yeah. Darn that, Dennis. He hit me right in my big blue eye. Ooh.
I'm sorry, Mr. Benny.
Sorry nothing. Now, listen here, Dennis. You knew very well this was a play and that I was supposed to knock you out.
Well, I'm Irish.
I don't care what you are.
Hey, what about my symphony?
The heck with your symphony. Dennis Day, I'm not going to forget this. There's no excuse. You saw the picture. Jimmy Cagney's supposed to knock out the champion. That's the only way he can get the money to help his brother. And what happens? The minute my back is turned, you hit me right square in the eye. Now, this is the last time I'm... This is the last number of the 16th program in the Curangelo series, and we'll be with you again next Sunday night at the same time. Ooh, how does my eye look, Mary?
Let's go to Ciro's and get a steak for it.
Okay, I'll take it out of Dennis's salary. Good night, folks.
The many sounds, the many faces of jazz and improvised music can be heard on the Spirits Rejoice radio program every Tuesday from 6 to 10 p.m. right here, WHFR.FM, WHFR Dearborn.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens a program with Way Down Yonder in Seattle. Yonder in Seattle, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to announce that Jack Benny has not yet returned from his trip to New York City.
However, he will be back with us next Sunday, and in the meantime...
No kidding, Don. Ain't Jackson going to be on the show tonight?
No, Phil. He wired me saying he's been delayed in New York. A big business deal's holding him up.
A big business deal?
Yes.
He's probably sitting in a restaurant waiting for the other guy to pick up the check. I know Jack.
No, I'm serious, Mary. He won't be back until tomorrow.
Well, what am I waiting for? Jello again. This is Smiling Phil Harris talking. And, folks, here's a hot one. You know, folks, a funny thing happened. A manicurist says to a guy in a barbershop, "Shall I file your nails?" And he says, "No, honey, just throw them away." Ain't that a Lulu?
Now, just a minute, Phil, just a minute. I'm sorry, but you can't be the master of ceremonies tonight. Jack has arranged to have Herbert Marshall take over the show.
You mean Herbert Marshall, that big movie star?
Yes, sir.
Gee, Herbert Marshall. I wish I'd known about this before. My hair's a mess.
Mine, too. I wonder if we'll have time to go to the beauty parlor.
Say, Don, what time is Mr. Marshall getting here?
Well, Rochester went over to pick him up. He should be here any minute.
You know, I'm pretty anxious to get acquainted with that guy. I never met him.
Well, don't say ain't never in front of him. You'll scare him away.
Don't worry now. I can be highbrow. When I put on the dog, you'd think I was graduated from Oxnard.
Oxnard? You mean Oxford.
All right, I got my towns mixed up. But you got nothing to worry about, fellas. I can be just as ritzy as he is.
You don't have to be ritzy, Phil. I've known Bart Marshall for years, and he's a grand person.
Hello, fellas.
Oh, hello, Dennis.
Oh, boy, guess who I just saw out in the hall?
Who?
The big movie star, Hubert Marshall.
Oh. Hubert, you mean Herbert Marshall. You're as bad as Phil.
Oh.
Well, Dennis, why didn't you bring him here with you? Mr. Marshall's taking Jack's place on the program tonight.
Gosh, if I'd have known that, I'd have baked a crumpet.
Hey, Don, don't you think you ought to go out and get Marshall?
Yeah, don't lose him.
Well, maybe that's him now. Come in.
Pardon me, is this the Jell-O program?
Well, Bart, come right on in. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Herbert Marshall.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm awfully sorry I'm late, Don, but Jack sent his man over in a Maxwell to pick me up. Yes, we had some tire trouble.
Oh, did one of the tires blow out?
One would have been nothing. Sounded like a gangster movie.
I know, Bart. I've ridden in that car. Oh, pardon me. I don't believe you know the other members of our cast. This is Mary Livingston, our leading lady.
Hello, Mr. Marshall.
How do you do, Miss Livingston? I've heard you on the air so often, I feel we're old friends.
Gee.
So, let's not be formal. I'll call you Mary and you call me Bart.
Gee.
You know, I'm not used to this sort of work. I hope I make good tonight.
You made good with me already.
Well.
And Bart, this is Dennis Day, our young tenor.
Oh, hello, Dennis.
Hello, Mr. Marshall, if I'm not too excited.
Now, calm down, Dennis, calm down.
Hey, Don, how about giving me a knockdown?
Oh, yes. Bart, this is Phil Harris, our musical director.
Glad to know you, Mr. Harris.
Put it there, Herbie. What's cooking?
What's cooking?
Yeah, you know, are you jiving? Are you solid? Are you on the beam?
Solid on the beam.
He means, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you. The weird fellow, isn't he?
Well, Bart, you'll just have to get used to Phil. Musicians are like that.
Oh, are they? Well, I'm sure we'll all get along beautifully, although it's rather difficult coming in here on such a short notice.
I'm sure Jack appreciates it.
Hey, Herbie, I can't figure this out. Are you pals with Jackson?
Jackson?
He means Jack.
Oh, I see. Oh, yes, yes. No, really, I ought to have an interpreter with this fellow. Well, Phil, no, we're not exactly pals, but I've known Jack for some time.
Did you work in a picture together?
No, I've never had that pleasure.
Well, then, did you meet him at a party or something?
No, ours is more of a business relationship. You see, for years now, Jack has been selling me Christmas cards. Very nice ones, too.
Christmas cards? Holy smoke!
He meets more darn people that way.
Well, let's get on with the program, shall we? I think a musical selection should be in order. You have an orchestra, haven't you, Mr. Harris?
Yeah, them's it.
But them's it.
Yeah, them boys sitting over there is it. What's the matter? Don't you speak English?
Well, frankly, old boy, I'm beginning to wonder. Amazing creature, isn't he?
He certainly is, Bart. Well, what are you going to play, Phil?
Well, it's an original composition written by myself entitled, That's What I Like About the South.
Oh, brother.
Yeah, and I'm going to sing a couple of choruses, too.
I've got a good notion to take Herbert Marshall and go home.
Now, don't you believe her, Herbie. It's going to be a great number.
All right, let's hear it. And now, ladies and gentlemen, you will have a band number by Phil Harris and his Them's Its. Play, Phil.
With me to Alabama, let's go see my dear old mammy. She's frying eggs and boiling hammy. That's what I like about the South. Right there you can make no mistakey. Where your nerves are never shaky. Ought to taste a layer cakey. That's what I like about the South. She's got baked ribs and candy yams, those sugar cured Virginia hams, Facebook full of those berry jams. And that's what I like about the South. Hot cornbread and black eyed peas, you can eat as much as you please, cause it's never out of season. That's what I like about the South. Don't take one, have two. They're dark brown and chocolate too. Suits me, they must suit you, cause that's what I like most. Way down where the cane groves call, down where they say you all walk on in with that southern drawl, cause that's what I like about the South. It's down where they have those pretty queens to keep a dreaming, those dreamy dreams, let's sip that absinthe to New Orleans. That's what I like about the South. Come old Bob with all the news, got the box, back coat and the button shoes, all caught up with his union dues, and that's what I like about the South. Here come old Roy down the street, woo, can't you hear them scuffling feet? He would rather sleep than eat, and then in it, I like about the South. She's got ham hocks and butter beans, spare ribs and turnip greens, Mardi Gras in New Orleans, and that's what I like about the South.
That was That's What I Like About the South, played by Phil Harris and his orchestra, with a vocal chorus by Mr. Harris. Did you really write that number, Phil?
Yep, every word of it. Ham hocks and butter beans and backbones and turnip greens. Don't that make your mouth water, Herbie?
Well, yes, it's one of the most appetizing songs I've ever heard. By the way, how did you happen to compose a number like that?
He was hungry.
Very good, Mary.
Oh, now cut that out. No. That wasn't it at all. There's a lot of songs about June and moon and love, so I figured I'd write about food.
Food, huh?
Yeah, just give me a cookbook and a piano and I'm going to town.
That's very interesting. I had no idea you had such a gastronomical outlook.
Gastronomical? Hey, I better write that down. That's a longy.
A longy?
He means a long word.
Oh, but why does he write them down?
He puts them in a scrapbook. He's making his own dictionary.
Yeah, I got over 300 of them, but I forget what they mean.
I see, yeah. He gets more fantastic every minute.
Oh, by the way, Bart, did Jack mention in his wire about our sketch this evening?
Why, no, he didn't. What sketch do you mean?
Well, we were going to do our version of Somerset Maugham's great play, The Letter. You know, the picture you made recently with Betty Davis? And Jack was going to play Herbert Marshall.
Well, that's very flattering.
And I was just wondering, Bart, since Jack isn't here, perhaps you'd be willing to play your part yourself.
Well...
You think you can do it, Gilbert?
Dennis.
Well, Bart, how about it? Would you like to join the Benny Little Theater Group?
Why, yes, it might be fun. I'll tell you what. Dennis, you sing your song, and then we'll do our version of the letter.
Oh, why bother? Let's just play post office.
That might be fun, too. But I think we better do the letter first. Now, you, Mary, you will be my leading lady.
Somebody pinch me. I'm dreaming. Ouch, Dennis!
I'm sorry, Miss Livingston.
Oh, go ahead and sing.
I'll get it. Hello? Oh, just a moment, please. It's for you, Mary, New York calling.
New York? Probably Jack. Hello? Put him on. Oh, hello, Jack. How are you? I know it's long distance, but how much does it cost to say how are you? All right, forget it. Say, Jack, how did your business deal come out? Yeah? Yeah? Yeah?
What about that business deal, Mary?
Alan finally paid the check. What's that, Jack? Yes, he's right here. I'll put him on. He wants to talk to you, Mr. Marshall.
Oh, thank you. Hello. Oh, hello, Jack. How are you? Sorry, old man. I forgot it was long distance. What? No, you don't have to do that at all. No, no. No, but really, old boy, I don't expect anything. Oh, very well, if you insist. Thanks awfully. Goodbye.
Well, I'll be darned. Is Jackson going to pay you for being on the program tonight?
No, but next year I get my Christmas cards for nothing. Let's have your song, Dennis.
Yours in the gray of December. Here or on far distant shore. Night has music, the sweetest music. It echoes something within my heart. I hold you near me, oh darling, hear me. I have a message I must.
That was Kira Mamucho, sung by Dennis Day, and a very beautiful number. You know, Dennis, I like the way you sang part of it in English and part in Spanish. That's quite a linguistic feat.
Yeah, linguistic.
And now let's have a go at our sketch, shall we? I'll play the same role I had in the picture, that of Robert Crosby, the rubber planter. And Mary, you'll be my wife, Leslie Crosby. It's a very difficult role.
Let's rehearse a little. Kiss me, darling.
Later, Mary. Now, let's see. We'll need a barrister. Phil, do you think you can handle the part of the lawyer?
Absolutely, old boy. How do you want me to play it? Gastronomical or linguistic?
A little of each. Well, I think that about takes care of the casting.
Say, Mr. Marshall, am I going to be in the play?
Well, in a way, Dennis. You see, you enact the role of the man who's been murdered. But unfortunately, as the story opens, you are already dead.
Oh, no dialogue, eh?
Well, hardly. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Then I might as well go over in the corner and have a chair.
That's a good idea.
Of course, it'll be more believable if I lay down on the floor.
Very well, you can lie on the floor.
But if I do that, I'll get my new suit wrinkled.
Young man, let's not worry so much, shall we?
Okay, bub.
Good. And now for our feature attraction this evening. Members of the Benny Stock Company and myself will present our version of Warner Brothers' current film achievement. Ladies and gentlemen, The Letter. The locale of our play is Singapore in the Malay Peninsula. Leslie Crosby, a beautiful young Englishwoman, has just been acquitted of the murder of Jeffrey Hammond, her lover.
That's me, folks. I'm just full of holes.
Young man, will you please lie down?
Yes, sir.
Mrs. Crosby's husband, her friends, and even the court believe her to be innocent. However, a very valuable piece of evidence has been withheld. A letter. A letter so condemning that it would have changed the entire course of the trial and sent Leslie Crosby to the gallows.
Hey, Hubert, shall I lay on my face or on my back?
Either one. Her husband has no knowledge of this damning bit of evidence, which is now in the possession of Mrs. Crosby's attorney. As the scene opens, the trial has just ended, and Leslie is being escorted through the crowded courtroom by her attorney.
One side there, thank you. Come into this room, Leslie. I must talk to you.
But my husband...
You can see him later. Come along. Well, Leslie, aren't you going to compliment me on my magnificent plea? I had that jury in the palm of my hand.
You had him drooling, too. All you talked about was ham hocks and butter beans. Some plea.
Well, I got you off, didn't I? Thanks to me, you are now a free woman.
Why shouldn't I be free? I shot Jeffrey Hammond in self-defense.
That's what the public believes. But you murdered him, and you done it with malice and forethought and all that stuff.
What are you talking about?
Well, just look at this. Look at this letter.
Dear Phil, I waited for you last night until all...
Wrong letter! Yeah, give me that. Now, here's the letter I mean. Do you see it?
Why, that's the letter I wrote to Jeff Hammond.
Precisely.
Oh, fine.
Now, look, do you realize that if this letter had been introduced as evidence, they'd have given you a hemp necklace?
Oh, never mind that. How did you get hold of this letter?
Well, I had to buy it from a blackmailer. He wanted $10,000, but I talked him down to 85 cents.
85 cents? Why, that's all the money my husband had in the world.
Well, that's the best I could do. Here, now take this letter and burn it up. The most terrible thing I've ever read. And if your husband ever sees it, you're going to...
Quiet. Here he comes now.
Oh, yes. Hello, Robert.
Hello, old boy. Ah, Leslie, my love.
Robert, kiss me, my darling.
Oh, my dear, I'm so glad. So glad this terrible ordeal is over.
Kiss me, my darling.
It's been like a horrible nightmare. And now, thank heaven, it's over. At last, we are together again.
Kiss me, my darling.
You'll never know. You'll never know what I've been through. Those nights of torment and loneliness.
Please, kiss me, my darling.
Oh, yes. Sweetheart.
Hey, Herbert, we got the same technique. Yeah, you're in there. Well, if you'll excuse me, old man, I'll toddle along. This is the most gastronomical day I've ever gone through. Hip, hip.
Oh, Robert, alone at last.
Yes, alone at last.
Kiss me, my darling.
Take it easy, old girl. We only just got through. Oh, Leslie, I can't tell you how happy I am.
But I've made such a frightful mess of things. How can you love me after what I've done?
But I do love you. Darling, I do.
No, no, you can't.
Believe me, Leslie, I love you now more than ever. I adore you, Leslie. Here, rest your head on my shoulder.
Oh, boy, if the girls at the May Company could see me now. Gee.
I have everything planned, Leslie. We're leaving Singapore, leaving it forever.
Yes, we must go away.
I know of a rubber plantation in Sumatra that we can purchase for only 85 cents.
Uh-oh. But there's something I must tell you, Robert. I had to use that 85 cents to buy a letter.
What? You've squandered my life savings on a mere scrap of paper? Leslie, let me see that letter.
I haven't got it.
Don't lie to me. What's that in your hand? Leslie, I must see that letter.
No, no, I can't show it to you.
Then read it to me.
No, no, it's too shameful, too horrible.
I don't care. I paid 85 cents for that letter, and I want to know what it says.
You're as bad as Benny. Very well, I'll read it. Dear Jeff. Oh, Robert, it's too terrible. I can't continue.
I insist. Read the rest of that letter.
I can't go on with it.
You must.
All right. You might as well know. Dear Jeff, roses are red, violets are blue. I like my husband, but I'm nuts about you. There. Now you know.
So that's it. You were in love with Jeff Hammond.
Yes, Robert, and I still love him. With all my heart and soul, I love the man I killed.
Yeah, killed.
Young man, will you please lie down?
Kiss me, darling, kiss me.
Please, Mary, please. Play, Phil. Christmas cards or no Christmas cards, I'll never go through this again.
Keep an Eye on Your Heart, played by the orchestra. And Bart Marshall, on behalf of Jack and every one of us, I want to thank you for coming over here tonight and doing such a swell job of pinch hitting.
No kidding, Herbie. You were terrific.
Terrific? I'll bet anything that means terrific.
Now you're catching on, Bob.
Thanks, Phil. Well, everyone, I've had a grand time here this evening, and it's been fun meeting you all.
Say, Mr. Marshall, you live in Beverly Hills, don't you?
Yes, Mary, I do.
Well, I live out that way myself. Would you mind dropping me off?
Why, no, I'd be glad to.
And on the way home, maybe we could stop at a drive-in for a sandwich.
A drive-in? That's a splendid suggestion.
Of course, I'm pretty hungry. Maybe we ought to go to a restaurant instead.
All right, we'll stop at a restaurant.
Well, I'll phone Ciro's and reserve a table.
Well, we certainly got there in a hurry. Come along, Mary. Well, goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye,
Mary. Cheerio, everyone. Oh, by the way, Mary, I'm afraid I'm being rather rude. Do you think I ought to invite the rest of the gang to Ciro's with us?
Nothing doing. You're mine, Bob. Come on.
This is the last number of the 18th program in the current Jell-O series, and we'll be with you again next Sunday night at the same time when Jack will be back with us again. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to announce that this coming week marks the 31st anniversary of the founding of the Boy Scouts of America. May we, on this occasion, wish this great movement continued success. Good night, folks.
Good night, Jack.
J-E-L-L.
For the latest Motor City bands hitting the scene, or even some of the greatest local bands from decades past, why don't you hand over that aux cord and tune into Detroit Flock City with your local Ladybird every Tuesday from 4 to 6 p.m. on the only station making waves, WHFR.fm.
All right, there you have Jack Benny. Herbert Marshall filling in for Jack. Date on that one is February 2nd, 1941. And we also heard from the same year, January 19, City for Conquest episode. We have waiting in the wings, Lux Radio Theater from 1938, I do believe. We're going to hear W.C. Fields and Poppy.
about those old records, those old phonograph records, the ones we used to play so long ago. What if they sound scratchy? The tunes really were catchy, and especially those that said, I love you so. I used to beg you over and over just to set the wedding day. To get you courtable, I'd bring my portable and melt your heart away. With all those old records, those old phonograph records, the ones we used to play so long ago.
All the ones about
records, those old,
all the ones about records,
the ones we used to play so long ago,
and the old wind-up Victrola. Barney Google was great.
The tunes,
all the songs about Kate,
and especially those that said I love you so.
Yuckahoola, hickey,
I used to beg you over and over, just to set the wedding day. To get you portable,
songs,
I'd bring my portable
songs
and melt your heart away. With all those old,
they were wonderful
records. Those old,
play them over again.
Records, the ones we used to play so long ago. The ones we used to play so long ago.
Founded in 2016 and sponsored by the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce, the Detroit Promise ensures that any student graduating from any high school in the city of Detroit will have a tuition-free path to an associate degree or technical certificate. Henry Ford College has been a proud participant in the Detroit Promise since the beginning. With 66% of all Detroit Promise students attending HFC, it is the largest Detroit Promise enrollment of any college. For more information, visit hfcc.edu/Detroit-Promise or DetroitPromise.com today.
All right. Thank you, Rob, with two B's. This is Radio Vault. We heard Guy Lombardo, Get Out Those Old Records. Guy Lombardo was most famous for New Year's Eve. He was on radio and television. Our parents and grandparents used to watch him ring in the new year long before Dick Clark and New Year's Rockin' Eve became part of the New Year's Eve festivities. But that's not what you tuned in for, is it? Waiting in the wings will be the Lux Radio Theater. Presentation originally heard back on March 7 of 1938. And then for our third hour, we'll hear an episode of Fibber McGee and Company during the time that Molly was a little bit ill, but they kept the show going. And we will hear the voice of Porky Pig and Bugs Bunny and numerous other cartoon characters. Mel Blanc had his own radio show. We will be hearing that during our third hour of today's Radio Vault. Here at 89.3 from the campus of Henry Ford College, we are WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. So let's listen to W.C. Fields now from March 7 of 1938.
California, the Lux Radio Theater presents W.C. Fields and Ann Shirley in Poppy.
Lux presents Hollywood. To the thousands of loyal listeners who wouldn't miss a Monday night with us, to the thousands of loyal women who insist on Lux Flakes, our grateful thanks. Your purchases of Lux Flakes make these programs possible. Our bill tonight is headed by W.C. Fields, Ann Shirley, John Payne, and Skeet Gallagher in Poppy. We'll also hear from Miss Margaret Graham of the Algie Barnes Self-Slaughter Circus, who tells us of customs, costumes, and superstitions of the circus. Louis Silvers conducts our orchestra. And now, here's our producer. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Cecil B. DeMille. Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Between the ages of 11 and 15, Mr. W.C. Fields, born Claude William Dukenfield, never slept on a real bed. He spent his nights under stairways, in box crates and doorways. Having no home, he'd become the idol of Philadelphia's other small boys. The toughest brats for miles around would seek him out for a fight. Fields never could refuse a challenge, and his bulbous nose is really a red badge of courage. It stands today as a radiant monument to the valor of its possessor and to the amazing accuracy of his opponent's fists. His fame as a juggler began with a $10-a-week job at Atlantic City. Fields was part of a free entertainment, which the management staged to stimulate the sale of refreshments. When business was dull, he would wade into the surf, scream for help, and pretend to drown. Huge crowds would collect, and while the victim was being resuscitated, the refreshment business would flourish. It was not unusual for Mr. Fields to drown three or four times a day. To this day, his character remains unchanged. He is still Fields against the world, a strange combination of cynicism and sentiment, of stern truth and honeyed prevarication. Mr. Fields starred in Dorothy Donnelly's stage play, Poppy, and also in the Paramount film from which comes our radio adaptation. His latest Paramount picture is the big broadcast of 1938, and we hear him tonight as Professor Eustace P. McGoggle. The title role will be played by that delightful young star, the versatile Ann Shirley. Ann is from RKO Studios, where her latest films are Law of the Underworld and Condemned Women. John Payne of Paramount Studios is Billy Farnsworth. Skeets Gallagher is heard as Whippet. And we're off to the big show as the Lux Radio Theater presents W.C. Fields and Ann Shirley in Poppy. Of a tiny Indiana town in the year 1881. At the end of the midway on a rickety platform stands a bulbous-nosed gentleman known as the Professor. In one hand he holds a decrepit banjo, in the other a quart bottle of purple bark sarsaparilla guaranteed. With his old top hat riding perilously on the bridge of his nose, he leans down to the crowd and addresses them in a rasping baritone.
Step right up, ladies and gentlemen, close to the platform. Step out of the gutter bar and let the water run. You'll hear absolutely free of charge my charming daughter, Poppy, flower of the song world. In a song recital, and I shall accompany her on that noble instrument, the Cadula Cadula. I thank you. It's my privilege and pleasure to introduce the most remarkable scientific discovery of marvel modern times. Purple bark sarsaparilla, $1 a bottle. Four quarters, one smacker. Purple bark sarsaparilla, ladies and gentlemen, the one cure. Remedy for man, a beast, fish, and fowl. Grow hair on a billiard ball.
Will it grow hair in a pool ball?
All but the eight ball.
It's a fake.
Well, you impugn my honor.
So that sawing a woman in half a fake. I saw her afterwards in a restaurant.
Well, you astound me. I thought they were killing from 8 to 12 women a day.
Let me through. I want to see the man who sells
you've got remedy.
Oh, that's fine. Let's leave through. How do you do? Lovely weather we're having. How many bottles?
Quick. None. I bought one bottle of that bio stuff from you yesterday.
Oh, so you did. So you did. And how's your Adam's apple today?
I never had an Adam's apple.
Oh, how unfortunate.
You sold me the stuff for my dyspepsia. I spilled a little on the floor last night, and my cat licked it up.
And this morning, expect to read it in your bulldog's eye. How interesting.
He's dead.
Overdose. He should have only taken a nip. Cat nip.
That medicine of yours killed him.
Just a moment. Step aside, young lady. Step aside. It cures hoarseness. Ladies and gentlemen, it cures hoarseness. It cures the most stubborn case of hoarseness. One little drop of this bottle, I can't take. Will cure the most cunning grace. Oh. Oh. It cures hoarseness.
Sheriff, over this way. Yes,
Sheriff, we better get out of here quick, Dick.
Quiet, dear. Ixnay, I can pray.
Sheriff, but she's getting the sheriff. Come on, Dick.
He's only twitting, dear, just how far. I'll probably sell a bottle to the Gildersleeve.
Where is he? Point him out.
Look, there. She did get the sheriff.
There he is, Sheriff.
Hey, you.
He's coming over here.
Copy, my child.
What, Dan?
Take it on the lamb, my little fawn. The Bunyan steeplechase is on.
There they go.
Look, birds chirping in the trees. Flowers rearing their pretty little heads, shuffling their little feet, and singing by mere Mr. Shea.
Oh, Dad, look. Do you mind if we stop walking for a while? I'm so tired.
Oh, how thoughtless of me. Sit down, my little plum, and rest your pretty little bones. Here's a nice tin can for you. Sit on that.
Do you think we're safe here? Gee, Dad, I'm so hungry.
Courage, my daughter, courage. The Green Meadow Carnival is just around the bend.
What bend?
Ah, you have me there.
Look, look, here comes a wagon.
Yeah. Gilpin's hurrying to the carnival.
Yes, but they're riding and we're walking.
Walking is good. Shortens the appetite. Here. Chew on this piece of milkweed. It's full of calcium. Good for the teeth.
Oh, no thanks. Dad.
Huh?
Dad, why don't you reform?
Reform who?
Well, yourself. Say, you're smarter than any other man I ever met. Why, if we could settle down in one of these little towns and get a house all our own, why, you'd own the whole town and most of the farms around it in 5 years.
You encourage me in the 5-year plan?
Oh, you know you could get it without stealing, too.
Steal? Like Robin Hood, I take from the rich and give to the poor.
What poor?
Us poor.
Us poor is right. Oh, Dad, I'm so sick of it. I'd like to be able sometime to look everybody straight in the face, and I'd scrub floors to do it.
How could you look anyone straight in the face when you're scrubbing floors?
Oh, Dad, please. We can't go on like this forever, just living from hand to mouth and sleeping in haystacks and dodging sheriffs.
Go on, taunt me. And when you see my emaciated body lying in the gutter, say to yourself, this is my work, and step over me.
Oh, darling, please forgive me. But those girls who passed us in that wagon, did you notice them?
One tried to give me the office, but I played her for a chill.
Oh, they look so happy and so pretty.
Poppy, someday I shall be rich. And you shall dress pretty, too. You shall have frocks and gowns of diaphanous silk. And you shall have a coach and four with gilded wheels. And flunkies and gold braid.
Yes, and just how are you going to get all this?
I hadn't thought about that. But where there's a will, there's a way. And this is pardon me, dear, just a touch of liver.
Dad, please listen to me. Oh, I know you mean well, but it isn't only for myself I want those things. It's for you, too.
You want me to wear frocks?
No. And it doesn't have to be a gilded palace, either. Just a nice little place. Something we can really call our own. You know, we've never had that. I know it hasn't always been easy for you, you know, bringing me up all by yourself, but, oh, gee, we can do better. We can, Dad, if you'll just make up your mind to it. Will you, Dad? Dad?
Fill up, barkeep. Hush up yourself. Make wine, scotch, or rye.
Oh, Dad.
Arrived at last, my dear. The Green Meadow Carnival, they call it.
Yes, but we haven't any purple bark. You haven't got a concession, and we haven't a dime in our pocket.
Don't change a thing, dear. Leave it all to me.
Oh, gee, I'm so hungry.
Hungry, my child? There's a place right over there.
The sandwich stand? But, Dad, we haven't got any money.
Quiet, child.
Dad, listen, please. You can't get anything without not paying.
Papada! Papada! Where's the entrepreneur?
Dad, please.
Where is that fella? Dracula. Entrepreneur, my good man.
Good morning.
Pal of service, please.
Oh, sure. What'll it be?
Give me two of those Lucy's bologna sandwiches. Sandwich show de la chien.
Two dogs coming up.
Dad, please.
Do you have a double, dear?
No, I don't want any.
Oh, that's fine. Make it two double.
All right, here you are.
Thank 20 cents. Thank you. Will you have mustard, Poppy John? Some mustard, please.
Yeah, it's right in front of you. It's 20 cents for the dog.
Right in front of me. Oh, yes. No mustard?
Say, that's the best there is. If you don't like it, don't eat it. That's 20 cents.
20 cents? Is this refold? Is the horse really fresh?
Of course it's fresh. That'll be 20 cents,
Oh, delicious. Fresh on this horse race, my farm. A little mayonnaise, my good man, and some cranberry sauce, if you have it.
And now listen, your horseradish, your mustard, a mayonnaise, a cranberry sauce, it's costing you 20 cents.
20 cents, huh?
Yes, 20 cents.
Ridiculously cheap. Very reasonable. Remind me to pay you at the end of the engagement.
No, no, you don't. You pay me right now.
Wait, here, mister. You can have mine back.
Mine also. I refuse to do business with a man.
You tramp, you've eaten more than half of them. How do you expect me to sell these now?
Oh, first you insult me, then you ask my advice on salesmanship.
Oh.
Come, my little lad.
Hey.
And you keep a civil tongue in your head, or you'll lose our trade.
Come back here, you. You'll fork over that 20 cents, or I'll take it out of your hide.
Unhand me, you wretch. Unhand me, say I'll crush every bone in your head.
Come on, shell out.
You take your hands off him. Let him alone.
He's ripping my coat. Let go of my coat.
I'll let go of your coat when you give me that 20 cents.
Oh, you've done it, Eric.
Dad, what's the matter?
Oh, you pay for this.
Say, what's the matter? I didn't do nothing. What's eating you?
It's broken my sacroiliac.
Huh?
My sacroiliac's broken in six.
What's the matter here? Break it up. Come on. What's the matter, Joe?
This guy here, boss, he wouldn't pay for the dogs, and now he says I broke his celiac or something.
The pain is excruciating.
Shut up.
Someone will pay for this and pay dearly.
I told you to shut up.
You know to whom you are addressing, man?
I don't know who you are, but I happen to be the manager of this, Joe.
Manager, eh? Someone will pay for this, and I think I know who.
All right, how much do you want?
How much do I want, Trying to bribe me.
Very well.
I'll take $10,000 in the concession. I should charge you $20,000. I always was an idiot where business was concerned.
I'll give you the concession and $10. Take it or leave it.
I'll take it.
Here. Your booth is at the end of the midway. Now, no shell games, no gambling of any kind or description. The mayor of this town is a very fussy guy.
No far fussier than I myself, I assure you.
All right, you can take over the concession any time you want.
Thank you. Very well, my little plum, it's just as I told you. Well, there's a will, there's a way.
Ready to open up today?
Yes, we're just mixing up a fresh batch of sarsaparilla. Can you please tell me where I could get a pail of water?
Sure. There's a little stream right down the way. Let the pail down from the bridge. It's pretty clear right there.
Well, thank you very much.
Gee, I'm terribly sorry.
Don't you even speak to me.
Shame on you trying to commit suicide at your age.
Think of your old father and mother. Think of me.
Yes, well, if I told you what I thought of you, I wouldn't be a lady.
Here, let me help you up.
Don't you touch me. Riding a horse that way across a bridge, you must be crazy.
Yes, come on.
No, and stop grinning at me like a silly ape.
By the mirror, I bet you'd grin, too. Do you have brown eyes, or is that just mud?
Why, you... Oh, gee, I guess I must look terrible.
You know, I fell into a stream once. You know what I did?
You went and dried off.
That's right. Look, there's an old swimming hole about 100 yards downstream. We always hang our suits on a tree there. My sisters ought to fit you. You slip into it, and I'll put the nag away, and I'll see you there in about 10 minutes. All right?
Well, all right.
Swell. You can hang your dress up and let it dry out. See you soon. Except for the time I was in college.
Oh, gee, it must be nice living in a town like this. So quiet and peaceful. And then being able to come here whenever you want. I'd like that. Oh, it's so lovely here, isn't it?
Hmm. Yeah, funny, I never noticed it before. To me, it's just been the swimming hole. Now it's all changed somehow. Your eyes aren't brown, are they? They're blue. They're pretty, too.
Well, thank you. I guess I ought to be getting back now.
Hey, wait. I don't even know your name.
It's Poppy.
Poppy. Gee, that's beautiful. My name's Billy Farnsworth. My father's the mayor of this town. I'm his son.
Well, that's a coincidence. Thank you so much for bringing me here.
Well, thanks for not being sore at me for pushing you off the bridge.
Well, it wouldn't do me much good.
Well, you could always sue, you know.
Yes.
The manager of the carnival was telling me about some old fake that tried to hold him up for $10,000 yesterday. Claimed he broke his arm. You could try that if you wanted to.
Could I?
Sure, I'd love to be sued by you. Then I could see you every day in court.
Maybe you'd find out I was a fake, too. Oh, excuse me.
What's the matter?
Nothing, nothing. I've just got to get back. Goodbye.
Hey, Poppy, wait.
Says I can find the ball.
I'll gentleman bets 30 cents. Plunger, take your choice.
I say, let me see. It's under the middle one.
Lift it up and see.
Nope, it ain't.
I got 11-3. I thought you had me that time. I fooled myself.
Here's your 30 cents.
Thank you. Who'll be the next to out with me? The closet game is no way a form of gambling.
Hey.
Game of
time. Here comes the mayor.
What's that?
The mayor, he's coming over here.
Oh, yes, my friends, I see him now. Yes, my friends, gambling is the root of all evil. And how will I know? Get rid of those shells. Get them out of here. 4 years, I was a victim of this horrible scourge. An unwilling pawn. Caught in the toils of Beelzebub. Let it be really a lesson to you. Lead us in song, Sister Wolfinger.
Excuse me, sir. May I shake your hand, please?
Of course, sure.
We need more men of your kind in these traveling carnivals, sir. Men with a real message. Men of steel.
Steel, sir? Oh, I think, yes, you're right. Pardon me.
Permit me to introduce myself. I'm Mayor Farnsworth.
Mayor, Your Honor, this is a surprise indeed. I am Dr. Eustace P. McGoggle. F-A-S-N.
Well, go right ahead with the lecture, Doctor.
Sorry, I just finished. Half a ticket ago. Are you remaining on the grounds all afternoon?
No, I'm leaving at 4:30.
How unfortunate. My next lecture won't start till about 4:32.
Oh, excuse me. Dr. McGargle, I'd like you to meet Mrs. Tubbs.
How do you do, Doctor?
Mrs. Tubbs is one of our town's most solid citizens.
Ah, she looks it. I mean, how do you do?
I
heard part of your talk, Doctor, and I think it was just thrilling. I wish you'd come and call on me sometime.
Oh, I'd be delighted.
Oh, thank you. Shall we go on, Mayor?
Oh, wait, Sarah. I want you to meet Dr. McGargle also. Dr. McGargle, this is Mrs. Sarah Brown.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Mrs. Brown is a great moral leader in our community.
Wow, woman after my own heart.
I hope not.
Very good, Sarah.
Shall we go?
Yes. Well, good night, Doctor, and good luck.
Oh, thank you, man.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Scarcely have left the ground before I shall be hard at it again.
Good night, Doctor. Don't forget, you're going to take me round the carnival.
Oh, I'll take you, yes. You bet I will. She's all dressed up like a well-kept grave.
10 cents says I can guess what shell it's under.
You still here? Go away.
My name's Pippin.
What a pretty name. Go away. You draw flies.
Well, gee whiz. All right.
Wait a minute. Who is that fat lady with just here?
That's Mrs. Tubbs. She's a widow. Kind of dumb, I always thought.
I just wanted to check on my judgment. Good day, Miss Whiffen.
Of course, she's pretty rich.
Who's rich?
Mrs. Tubbs. Got her hands on most of the money in this town.
Is that so?
Yep, it was left to her in a wheel.
In a wheel, eh?
Yep, second cousin or something left it to her in a wheel.
That's very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Very interesting. Widow, eh?
Yep. Widow. Yeah. You thinking of something?
Yes, I was, oh. Yes. As an old blind aunt of mine used to say, where there's a will, there's prosperity just around the corner.
It's early the same evening, and Professor McGargle has gone a-wooing. On the doorstep of Mrs. Tubbs' comfortable house, he adjusts his purple brocaded vest, flourishes a tattered handkerchief at his dusty shoes, and raps smartly on the door.
Dropping, hear those pennies fall. Everyone's for the professor, he will get them all and more too. What's the matter, everybody dead? Ah, good evening, Mademoiselle Shrubs.
Why, Dr. McGargle, what a pleasant surprise. Oh, come in, please.
Thank you.
Well, oh, go right in the parlor, Dr. McGargle. Welcome to my modest little cottage.
Oh, quite a charming lean-to you have here. Reminds me of my wiki-op on the Magogo River. Tributary to Lake Titicaca. Would you sit down, please?
Oh, thank you.
I hope you'll pardon my intruding at this hour, Mrs. Plubbs.
Tubbs,
yes, thank you. Well, I came on a mission of utmost delicacy.
Oh, something to do with charity, no doubt.
Well, yes and no. Nevertheless, I'm ashamed to come empty-handed. I had fully intended to bring you a basket of hollyhocks, but I couldn't steal a buy at them. They're out of season. I didn't want to bring you canned hollyhocks.
Oh, of course I understand. Let me take your hat.
Oh, no trouble. I'll put it right here.
Oh!
Oh, what a clumsy Japanese I am. I'm afraid I've broken your lovely bar.
Oh, it's all right. It's just some of the water spilling on the family album.
Now, here, let me dry it off.
Oh, water fades pictures, so it's horrid. Oh. Do you like water?
A little on the side. Give it to me. I'll dry it.
Oh!
The pages, this one's loose. This came out right by hand.
Oh, well, it really doesn't matter.
Oh, you're too kind, Mrs. Dubb. I shall take this picture along with me and have a new print made the first opportunity.
Oh, but you really don't have to.
Oh, say no more. Dismiss it. It's good as done.
Oh, well, if you insist. Oh, I'm rather proud of my album, you know. Such an old family.
Yes, so I see.
Are you interested in family albums,
they
Dr. McCarthy?
They are the fondest things I am of.
There are some very interesting things in this one.
I'm sure. Well. John L. Sullivan.
Oh, no. This is my old Aunt Anna. Isn't she sweet?
Oh. Yes, she is. Yes, she is. She's very quaint. What biceps. What a teaser.
Look, this one here. The man with the beard.
What's that? Well, of all things, if it isn't Cockeyed Mulligan.
I don't know who Mr. Cockeyed Mulligan is, Dr. McCargo, but this is a picture of my husband.
Oh, is that so? Oh, what a fine-looking old codger he is, too. I hope you pardon the mistake, Mrs. Dove. I confused you with a man who used to work with me, worked for me, rather, in the silver mine, gold and platinum mines I had up at Cohen's Gulf.
What?
Old Mulligan, the old stew. Finest fellow that ever lived. Hung before his time. He died before his time. Died young.
Oh, did you say you owned gold and platinum mines?
Oh, did I? Yes, it might have slipped out.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah, I always thought so myself. That's one of the things that brought me here tonight.
Really?
Yes. Mrs. Nubbs. Well, a man has spent his life at hard work. Did I ever tell you the story of how Mulligan and I pardoned here? Dove off an escarpment of frigid ice into the Winnemucca River. Each with a canoe under his arm.
Oh, how brave.
When we approached the opposite shore, we were confronted by 50,000 Skagway Indians.
Oh.
There they stood with their tomahawks raised high above their heads.
Oh.
Mulligan and I unsheathed our bowie knives and cut a path through this wall of human flesh, dragging our canoes behind us.
Oh, marvelous.
Well, anyway, nothing really. When a man has amassed his share of this world's goods, his heart turns to things of a more spiritual nature. He dreams of peace and security and a mellow old age in the company of...
Yes?
The woman I love.
Oh, Dr. McCargo.
Mrs. Trubb. Has anyone ever told you were beautiful?
Well, yes.
I knew they had. I know they'd beat me to it. I knew it.
Oh, no, now, but wait. Before you go any further, Doctor, I think I ought to tell you.
Huh?
I shall never marry again.
Oh, you won't, eh? After leading me on.
What?
You can't take a man's heart and tear it to shreds.
Why?
Making me look like a knave in the eyes of the world.
Oh.
Me with a grown daughter.
Oh, the idea.
Why, it's a clear case of breach of promise.
What?
Women, women, women. A mere pawn in the clutches of an adventurer.
Oh, the idea. Oh, Dr. McCardle,
Yes, sir, Professor. That's mighty fine stuff you got there, and mighty fine of you to invite me over, too.
Oh, not at all, not at all. Here, have another lager. Sure, Mr. Whiffen, drink deep of the brimming bowl.
It's kind of hot, ain't it?
Yeah, it hurts. Your purple box sarsaparilla, my own private batch. 98% spirits fermenti, 2% sweetener. We're talking about Mrs. Muggs, I believe.
You mean Mrs. Tubbs, yes. Yeah. She has plenty of money, though it ain't rightfully hers.
It isn't, eh? How come?
Well, the whole caboodle of this estate belongs to Catherine Putnam, if she can be found.
Oh, a missing heiress, eh?
Yep, been gone for 20 years, ever since she fussed with her father. She ran off with the circus. That left Mrs. Kind, Mrs. Tubbs, next of kin.
Oh, millions molding in the bank, eh? I'd like to do something for that poor, unfortunate soul. If I get my hands on that money, I could double it in a fortnight.
If you could get your hands on it, but nobody can, but nobody's going to either, until they find out what's become of Mrs. Catherine Putnam and her daughters.
Daughter, eh?
Yep, she had a baby.
How old would she be about now?
Oh, let me see now. Secretine's figure, sweetheart, 18, to best of my recollection.
18, eh? Just about Poppy's age.
That's right.
And if that daughter, Catherine Putnam's daughter, if she could be found, she'd inherit the whole estate, eh?
Yep. Thinking of something?
Yeah, no, of course, no. Well, good night, friend, and I think I can call you my friend.
Oh, no, you don't. You're figuring on something. I can read you like a book. And if I was you, I wouldn't try to pass off my daughter as Catherine Putnam's, unless I had expert advice. Am I in?
My dear man.
Am I in?
Do you suppose I would try to prove that I married Catherine Putnam? Do you suppose I would try to fake a marriage certificate? Do you suppose I would say that my daughter is not my own flesh and blood, but Catherine Putnam's daughter? Do you suppose I would do all this for the sake of filthy lucre?
Yes, I do.
Oh, all right, then. You're in.
What do you say, Poppy? Once around again?
All right, I'll get the brass ring this time.
Then we've got to get off. I want to speak to you, Poppy.
All right, Billy. Fun, Billy. Thank you a lot.
Fun. A girl like you been around carnivals all your life, and you still get a kick out of a wooden horse. I can't understand it.
Well, I guess I feel like you did. You know about the swimming hole. Oh, I never knew it was such fun before.
Poppy, you've forgiven me, haven't you? Well, you know, for what I said the other day about...
Oh, of course I have. You didn't know, and, well, anyway, I guess part of it's true.
No, but it isn't. Why... Well, he's a swell guy.
Oh, he is a swell guy.
Poppy, you still feel the same, I mean about, well, wanting to settle down in a little town like this?
Well, I guess so. Why?
Well, I could fix it.
You?
Sure.
But how?
Well, all you have to do is just stay here. Stay here and marry me.
Billy! Oh, but you don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, I do. I mean it. It just struck me all of a sudden, Poppy, but honest, I mean it, like I never meant anything in my life.
Oh, Billy, you're so sweet, but... Oh, I couldn't do it. I couldn't leave Dad to go roaming all over the country by himself. You know, he'd get in an awful lot of trouble without me.
No. Well, then it's hopeless, huh?
I'm afraid so.
Yeah, well, it's a good idea.
Billy, look, maybe someday...
What?
Maybe someday we'll come back this way, and if I do, and if things are different... Well, they may be different. You never can tell.
Oh, sure you can, Poppy. Poppy, would you give me something to keep until you do come back? I know it sounds silly, but I really want it.
All right. I'll give you the only thing I've got, Billy. I know it isn't much, but it's something. Here. It's this locket. I've had it ever since I was a kid. It's only a baby's locket, but, well, it's gold anyway.
Oh, thanks, Poppy.
Here, Mayor, the professor's temporary quarters.
You say you're positive that Dr. McGargle was married to Catherine Putnam after she left home?
That's right, Mayor.
Sounds awful fishy to me.
Here we are. Good morning, Doctor.
Mr. Whiffen, good morning.
Dr. McGargle, I brought Mayor Farnsworth to see you.
Oh, Your Honor, I trust you're fit this supposed AM.
Good morning, Doctor.
Mayor Farnsworth wants to ask you a few questions.
Oh, proceed, Your Honor.
Yes. Doctor, what was your wife's maiden name?
My wife. You refer to Catherine?
No. The family name. Was it by any chance Putnam?
I'll be candid with you, Mayor. It was. But she rarely used it. A misunderstanding in the family.
Mayor Farnsworth is the sole trustee of the Putnam estate.
That's so. Very interesting. Very interesting.
Yes. Mr. Whiffen tells me your wife passed away several years ago.
Yes, poor dear. She was killed in Upper Sandusky, run over by a pie wagon. One of those hit-and-gallop-away drivers. One of the horses, the gray mare, sway back, Dable.
Never mind the horse. Describe your wife.
Her name was... Huh? Oh, yes, my little bride of yesteryear, pardon me. My pigeon... My little kitty pie.
What was her approximate weight?
Well, she fought as a welterweight. She varied from time to time. She dieted frequently, you know. They'd have to catch her on the scale.
Well, what was her average weight?
Average weight, let me see. It's just slipped my mind for the moment.
Well, was it 100 pounds, 200 pounds?
What did you say, Mr. Whiffen?
Nothing. Got a little cough, that's all.
Try some of this pine tar elixir. You're coughing trigs, maybe.
Well, Dr. McGargle, 100 or 200?
I would say offhand, 100 or 200 pounds. I never watched you closely on the scales.
Well, 100 pounds seems to check. Now, tell me, what about her height?
Oh, you mean how tall was she?
Yes.
Oh. Yes, now let me see. Your mind works so quickly, Mayor.
What's this? What?
Nothing, Your Honor. Let me see now, how tall was she? Oh, yes. She was 8 feet tall.
8 feet?
Pardon me. This is all very distressing. I was thinking of a piece of land I bought, 8 by 16, up in Cucamonga. Had a very fine view of the ocean.
Well, how tall was she?
I got you. I got you that time. She was 5 feet 3 inches in her silk stocking. Fraction shorter than her bare feet, of course.
Yes. Well, we've been searching for Catherine Putnam for years now.
You see, Doctor, if Catherine died without leaving any children, the whole estate goes to Mrs. Tubbs.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Tubbs.
But you have a daughter, Doctor.
True. Potential heiress to my vast copper interests on the shores of Lake Titicaca. High up in the Andes.
Tell me, Doctor, had your wife any distinguishing marks? Any birthmarks?
Birthmarks. No, she never slept in the berth. She preferred the smoking room. We always played blackjack for chewing tobacco.
Uh-huh. Catherine Putnam had a mole on her left ear.
Did, eh?
Yes, he did.
Ah, that was when you knew her. I removed it later with purple fox sarsaparilla.
Oh, I see. Well, have you any other proofs?
Nothing at all. Oh, yes, I have a photograph of her. Taken in her teens in the mud bath of the manor house up at Punxsutawney. Now, where did I put that? She loved those mud baths. I had that around here for after Miss Lady. Oh, what's this? Oh, here it is. This is our marriage license, which, of course, can be of no interest to anyone.
What? Let me see that.
Careful, please.
A marriage license. Doctor, do you know the value of this document?
Only that it is very near and dear to me.
By this, your daughter becomes the heiress to the Putnam fortune.
You overwhelm me. What a coincidence that I should have carried it all these years. And now it serves to bring more untold wealth and happiness to my little plum.
I congratulate you, Doctor. Your daughter is a very lucky girl.
Thank you. You've been a great help, Your Honor.
I've always known that someone would come along to claim the Putnam fortune, but I've always been afraid of imposters, thieves.
Oh, thieves. Terrible creatures. I avoid them like I do whiskey.
We would have caught anyone who tried it. Yes, sir. We'd have given them 20 years of hard labor.
I know you might catch them all right. But the hard labor would be a bit difficult, I'm afraid.
That's right. But we've been spared that, Dr. McGargle.
I'm very happy for all concerned.
Yes, the Putnam fortune is in good hands. I'm sure of it. Well, I'll go and see about transferring the estate. Good day.
Thank you. Good day, Your Honor. Good day. What a man. What a brain, if any.
We pause for station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. Now for the third act of Poppy with W.C. Fields and Anne Shirley. The news of Poppy's good fortune has spread rapidly around the town. On the strength of the wealth that will soon be his daughter's, the professor has blossomed forth in a beautiful new pea-green suit. As he strolls down the main street, he's greeted by admirers on every side.
Morning. Morning, Professor.
Morning, my good man.
Morning, Doctor.
Morning, friend.
Planning to fix up the Putnam estate much, Professor?
Somebody said you was figuring on selling it.
Yeah, what about it, Doc?
Gentlemen, I have already granted the Green Meadow Gazette a full interview on all matters pertaining to my daughter's inheritance. Therefore, I should not care to make any premature oral announcement for fear of misquoting myself. But I may tell you, there will be a formal dance and clam bake and possibly a baseball game in the Putnam House in the very near future to celebrate my daughter's newfound wealth. And you are invited one and all. Try to get in.
Hey, Professor, I want to see you.
Good morning, Mr. Whippin. Sorry I'm in such a hurry. May be able to squeeze you in for a few moments later on in the season.
Oh, you know, Professor. I said I wanted to speak to you, and I'm not going to.
And I said, Mr. Whippin, that I was in a hurry.
You ain't been in such a hurry to let me have some of the money you've been owing me for the last week or so, you know. Get my hands on it.
Quiet. I'll see you some other time.
No, you'll see me right now. And if you don't, I'll publish your double dealings all over this community.
Shut up, I tell you. Shut up. If there's been any double dealings, my friend, I dare say you've had your finger in it. You hold on.
What's up, Doc?
Yeah, what's the matter?
Have you known me further, I shall summon the constable.
Oh, no, you won't.
Cease. Or I shall smite you upon the sconce with this truncheon.
You lug.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Make a day.
It isn't true. It can't be.
Well, if it isn't, you're certainly feeding the whole town for nothing. Look at them. They'll have that buffet supper cleaned up before it's even time to dance.
Oh, well, let them. I want them to be happy, too. Just as happy as I am.
You've got everything you want, Poppy.
Oh, more than everything, Billy. But, you know, I don't want to take it all. I want to give half to Mrs. Tubbs.
But, Poppy,
I wouldn't feel right if I didn't.
Good evening, Poppy.
Oh, Mrs. Brown.
How are you, Billy?
I'm fine, Aunt Sarah.
I'm so glad you could come, Mrs. Brown.
Do you think I'd miss it, my dear? I've been a friend of Billy's too long to miss the announcement of his engagement.
Engagement?
Oh, dear. I suppose I've let the cat out of the bag again.
You certainly have. Poppy, your father's going to announce our engagement tonight. You don't mind, do you?
Mind? Of course she doesn't. You're getting a fine boy, Poppy, and he's getting a very sweet girl.
Oh, thank you.
As Mayor of Green Meadows, it is my privilege at this time to introduce to you a man who needs no introduction. I give you that great entertainer, that kindly and lovable character, Dr. Eustace P. McGargle, F.A.S.S.
I thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I shall play for you this evening the first motive of the Doogee from the opera Schreckenschmatz by Gilka Kimmel and Ossipee Bedapole on my beloved Cthulhu Cthulhu. But before I do, I want to introduce to you the marvel of the scientific age, Purple Bog Sarsaparilla. Come down.
Dad, no.
Oh, I beg your pardon, dear. I beg your pardon. I'm awful sorry. What a faux pas. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. I have a very important announcement. Soon, ladies and gentlemen, in this very room in which you stand, two of the oldest families in Indiana will be joined by a wedlock. I refer to the family Farnsworth and the House of MacArthur.
What's the matter? Who are you?
What's the matter,
Mr. Whippin? What's the meaning of this?
Your Honor, before this goes any further, I want you to know that this man, the father of the girl who's to be your daughter-in-law, is one of the biggest swindlers that ever come down the pike.
What's that?
Man's mad. He's a dildog. He belongs in the nut bag.
Mr. Whippin, you'll have to support those remarks.
I'll support them, all right. You've got that marriage certificate he gave you?
Yeah, right here in my pocket.
Well, take a look at it. That certificate is a forgery.
What?
Yes, and I can prove it. He claims this paper was made out in 1863. You see that watermark there? Plain as the bones in your hand, 1881.
I've been framed.
I've been swindled. Get a lawyer.
Dr. McGargle, explain this at once.
I shall explain it. Have no fear. I shall have my attorney here first thing in the morning. Poppy, take it on the lamp.
Stop that man.
Poppy. Oh, don't cry, Poppy.
Let me alone, please.
Run along, Billy. I'll take care of her. Come, Poppy. You're going home with me. Poppy, dear, don't cry anymore. And don't worry about him. He'll be all right. Oh, they never made an arrest in this town except by mistake.
Oh, why did he do it? Why?
Oh, I guess he just didn't know any better.
But he does. He's smart, really. Honest, he is. Who's there?
No, I'll answer it. You stay here.
Good evening, Miss Brown.
Oh, Dad.
May I step in for a moment?
Yes, get in before somebody sees you.
Oh, Dad, I was so worried. You came back for me.
Yes, to say goodbye, my baby. I have been looting the local band of assassins all evening. I saw the light in this modest cottage, and looking in the window, I spied you, my little plum.
Oh, Dad, please, you've got to hide. What'll you do if they find you?
About 20 years.
If you're lucky.
Quite true.
Oh, Dad, you can't. You've got to get away now. Come on, dear, I'll go with you.
No, my baby, you must stay here.
But I don't want to. I want to be with you. You're my father.
My plum, I can't lie to you any longer. I'm not your father.
What?
No, my baby.
Oh, Dad, you're lying. You don't know what you're saying.
It's the truth. I found you with the circus when you were 3 years old. Listen, the bloodhounds are on us. I must go.
Oh, but Dad.
Here, my plum. I empty my pockets for you. Take this worldly goods, $3 in cash, the shell game, and some private paper. They're all I have.
Dad, you can't leave now.
I must, dear. Goodbye, my plum, and bless you. And one word of fatherly advice before I go.
Yes, Dad.
Poppy, never give a sucker an even break. If you ever wish to join me, telegraph me in case of the Ice Palace, Montreal.
Oh, he's gone and I'll never see him again.
Poppy, dear, perhaps it's all for the best.
Oh, no, how can you say that? Oh, I don't care if he was my real father or not. He's the only one I've ever known.
Well, he didn't leave you very much, my dear. A shell game, that'll be a help. And a photograph. Ooh, looks like it's been torn out of some album. Poppy, what is this?
What?
This picture. Where did he get it?
I don't know.
Do you know who this is? It's a picture of Catherine Putnam. And that's her little girl right there, see? She was just a baby.
Well, are you sure?
Of course I'm sure. I'd know Catherine Putnam. She was one of my best friends. And that little locket around the baby's neck, I gave it to her at her christening.
Why, I have a locket like that.
Where?
I gave it to Billy. It's shaped just like this one.
Wait. Did you open it?
Well, open it. I didn't know it opened.
There's a picture in it, a picture of Catherine Putnam's baby. It was cut down from this one here. If the picture in that locket is the same as this one...
And if it is...
Oh, come on, quick.
Where are we going?
We've got to find the mayor, and we've got to find Billy, and we've got to find that locket. Here's the picture. He had it in his pocket, Mayor. Where he got it, I don't know.
That's Catherine Putnam, all right. And that's her baby.
Now, wait, Billy. Billy, have you got that locket?
Here it is.
Open it, Billy.
Give it to me. Look, the picture in the locket. It's the same as the other.
Then...
Oh, you are Catherine Putnam's daughter and the rightful owner of the estate.
This proves it, beyond a doubt.
Go on inside, Professor.
Unhand me, you flat-footed Gildersleeve, or I'll kick you in the shin.
Dad!
Well, I got him, Mayor. He tried to escape on a stolen horse.
It was my horse he stole.
Oh, Dad, what happened?
The fortunes of war, my plum. I never did think much of that horse. And he dropped dead right in front of the police station.
Mayor, you've got to release him right now.
Of course, my dear. Constable, take those handcuffs off of him.
What?
Go on. You can't arrest a man for stealing a dead horse.
Certainly not. What's the matter? Is everybody crazy?
Oh, Dad, listen. Darling, I've got the most wonderful news for you. I'm really an heiress.
Sure, you're getting smart now.
No. Dad, look, I'm really Catherine Putnam's daughter. We just proved it.
What, Catherine? Why, of course you are, my plum. I knew it all along.
Then why didn't you say so?
If you remember, my dear fellow, I did say so, and you're going to give me 20 years. Well, I must say goodbye.
Goodbye? What for?
The carnival is moving, dear. And I'm moving with it.
Oh, no, Dad, no.
Yeah, there's no place for me here. But I'll come and see you, if I may. I shall come on Sundays for chicken dinner.
Dad, please, we want you to live with us.
No, my plum, not a word. This is where you belong, my little baby. You'll be happy. And I could never feel happy or natural unless there was a copper at least 100 yards behind me.
Oh, Dad, I love you.
I love you, Poppy. Goodbye, my little plum.
And that is the end of Poppy. Mr. Fields and Miss Shirley will rejoin us presently. Meanwhile, Melville Ruick wants to give you another of his strange but true facts, Mr. Ruick. Ladies and gentlemen, in this ring you are about to witness one of the most dazzling and electrifying exhibits ever countenanced by man. It is known to science as the Probatus Fieldsium, and to the world in general as the nose that launched 1,000 quid. Here it is, ladies and gentlemen, accompanied by W.C. Fields and Anne Shirley.
Thank you, but let's be informal. Just please call me Whitey.
Did you ever really travel with a circus?
Oh, yes, Anne. I once lent my services to a peregrinating mountebank. I was with him for a brief sabbatical. He made me valet de chambre to the elephant.
You mean you packed its trunk?
Yes, I'll never forget my first day under the big top. The wardrobe mistress handed me a uniform, a dazzling creation of red and gold. The gold was counterfeit.
Did it fit you, Mr. Fields?
It fit me fine, Mr. DeMille, but it required every ounce of strength in my frame to get it on that elephant. Her name was Gertrude.
Go on, please. What happened then?
I recall one beautiful afternoon as I was sitting in front of Gertrude's stall when a little lipper ambled up, a child, Annie, with a bag of peanuts. The little wretch pointed at my nose and said, "Look, Mama, this elephant talks." Did my nose turn, my face turn red?
But, Mr. Fields, don't you know that anything washed in Lux never changes color? Might I recommend that you dip your trunk, nose, into a noggin of those beautiful Lux suds?
Madam, do you too wish to impugn my honor? I shall be heckled no more. Mr. DeMille, I bid you good night.
Gargle like a true McSpoken. Oh, I mean spoken like a true McGargle. Good night, Mr. DeMille, and thank you.
Good night, Anne. Good night, Professor. To our stage next Monday night comes the exciting two-fisted drama of a man's fight for power and wealth. Force is the only law he respects. By force, he wins success and a wife. By force, he loses both, until he finally learns that there's another law in life called love. Our play is titled The Boss. It was written by Edward Sheldon and proved a great hit on Broadway. It brings back to our microphone three superb Hollywood artists, Edward Arnold, Fay Wray, and H.B. Warner. Our sponsors, the makers of Lux Flakes, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday night, when the Lux Radio Theater presents Edward Arnold, Fay Wray, and H.B. Warner in The Boss. This is Cecil B. DeMille saying good night to you from Hollywood.
Heard in our play tonight with Keith Gallagher as Griffin, John Payne as Billy Farnsworth, Helen LeGrand as Mrs. Tubbs, Lou Merrill as Mayor Farnsworth, Gretchen Thomas as Sarah Brown, and W.L. Thorne as Manager of Circus. Louis Silvers appeared for courtesy of 20th Century Fox Studios, where he directed music for the new picture, Sally, Irene, and Mary. John Payne will be seen shortly in the Paramount film, College Swing. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
All right, this is Radio Vault, Lux Radio Theater there, from way back in 1938. March 7, to be exact, of 38. We're going to move into our next segment in just a moment. We have got on tap Fibber McGee and Company, followed by the Mel Blanc Show. our listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. It's WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. This is Radio Vault, hour number 3. We go to May 10th of 1938, and Fibber McGee and Company.
The makers of Johnson's Wax present Fibber McGee and Company with Billy Mills Orchestra. The program opens with Fine and Dandy. Seems to be a year of upsets. 3 feet of fog in California basements. A long shot wins the Derby. And most startling of all, Fibber holds a job for 2 weeks in succession. Yes, he's still manager of the Bijou Theater. And here in his office we find Fibber, walk, don't run to the nearest exit, McGee.
Hey, Sil, did all them stage acts I was going to interview show up?
Yeah, I saw all them folks that did the rope trick.
Now, that's okay. They told me they might be tied up today. Well, come on, let's go in and see what the mothers have got.
Yeah.
Quiet, everybody. Quiet, please. Quiet.
Oh, Mr. Manager, please hear me swing Loch Lomond for you. I'll take the high road and you'll take the low road.
That's enough. That's enough. Yeah. That's okay. If I get to Scotland before you, I'll wait for you in the drugstore. You hear that, Sil? With a map like her, she'll get off the high road before she's out of town. Hey, you own this dog act, Bud?
Yes, sir, and believe me...
Well, what have you got that NBC painted on their feet for?
Oh, them paws are for station identification.
I see. Well, I'll keep their claws in your contract. Hey, quiet! Quiet! Quit hammering that syncopated sawhorse while I'm trying to talk, Bud. And listen, do you always wear that net over your head while you practice?
Oh, no, I was just rehearsing the flight of the bumblebee.
Well, tell your bees they can buzz off. We only allow one kind of wax on this program. And besides... Stop it! Quit! Quiet! How about you, you tap dancer over there? Can you do a buck and wing?
Not since the recession, sir. It's a nickel and wing now.
Well, I'll have to have the band leader accompany you with pennies from Hoofin. All right, all right. I'll talk to you all later. Come on, Sil, back in the office. Phew. Sil, ain't there any vaudeville left that ain't noisy?
Certainly there is, mister. I have a nice, quiet, refined act for the family trade.
Hey, how'd you know what I was talking about with the door shut?
I'm a mind reader.
Oh, yeah? Well, don't give me that there stuff, Bud. That mind reading stuff is all a fake. It's the bunk. Suppose you read my mind.
Certainly.
Yeah.
You're thinking you're the smartest guy in the theater business. You're thinking there never was a manager with your original ideas. You're thinking you're going to revolutionize stage shows.
Why, Sil, this guy's wonderful. You're hired, Bud. Report next week.
Okay.
By the way, where was you reading minds last?
Nightclubs.
Why'd you quit? No business?
No, no minds.
We'd better quit thinking, please, till he get out of the building.
Well, if he reads my mind now, he won't dare come back.
Excuse me, Mr. Manager, but won't you get a picture with the Marx Brothers in it?
Why, certainly, sis. Make a note of that, Sil. You like the Marx Brothers, sis, huh?
I really do. Mm-hmm. I think Frederick Marx is one of our finest actors.
Yeah, me too, sis. I also like that dance team, Joan and Brother Crawford.
Oh, yes, Yes, and Laurel and Judge Hardy. They're wonderful. Well, thank you very much.
Frederick Marks. Still, it's gags like that that bring down our Bing Crosley.
Excuse me, Mr. McGee, but ain't you going to hire no acrobats, please?
Acrobats? You betcha I am, Sil. Being an old acrobat myself, and that's me favor them. You know, I was in act once, Sil, where I was top man on a human pyramid of 13 acrobats.
Yes.
I'd climb up and stand on the shoulders of the high man and wave a little American flag.
Well, that must have been real exciting, please. Well, why you ever give it up?
Well, one night in Peoria, just as I got to the top of the pyramid, the acrobats union called a strike, and them guys all walked out on me.
Did you? Well, did you fall, Mr. McGee?
No, sir. But only my patriotism held me up, Sil. I refused to lower that American flag. Ta-da. So I stayed suspended there till a fellow...
Mr. Billy Mills, please.
Oh, hi, Billy. I wanted to talk to you, my man.
What about?
The music in this theater. I got an idea that folks are tired of swing music, Billy. They want classical music. Now, for instance, take some of your who's your favorite composer?
Cezanne.
Yeah, says who?
Cezanne.
Oh. You chewing tobacco, Billy?
No, I'm not. Cezanne is a famous composer.
Well, be that as it may or may not be, or not. Let's hear your next number. What is it?
You're an Education.
Oh, is that by Cezanne?
No, it's by Dubin and Warren.
Oh, okay. But you better get going. This is my Debussy day. You can return that gag when you get through with it, folks. I got to give it back to Burns and Allen. Folks, Professor William Randolph Mills and his sophomores play You're an Education. Matriculate, Mills. That was Billy Mills and his orchestra playing You're an Education. If I do say so myself, I shouldn't it?
Are you the manager?
You betcha, sis. How much was in the coin purse of the pocketbook you left on some seat during the last show?
I didn't leave my purse.
You didn't?
No.
Now listen, if you're just a female impersonator, bud, try
please.
To...
Please! I came in to tell you that one of your ushers was impudent to me.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear that, sis.
What?
I'm always happy to get reports of any of the help that ain't doing his duty. What'd he do?
Well, he asked me if I liked to sit way down in front.
Uh-huh.
And I said yes, and he said it was bad for my spine to do that. Then he turned his flashlight on my hand and started to tell my fortune.
Say, I'll have to promote that guy. He's got ideas. Was it a good fortune, sis?
Well, he said I was going on a long journey up to the balcony.
Sis, you leave him to me. I'll speak to him when he goes off duty at 12:30.
He goes off duty at 12:45.
How'd you know?
He's going to drive me home.
He's going to drive me nuts. Hey, Sil.
Yeah?
What's all these cans of film on my desk here for?
I don't know, Mr. McGee. The man from the projection booth, he brung them in. He say the labels is all tore off and he don't know what film they is.
Well, I'll see if I can identify him. Open this can here.
Yeah.
the hurricane. Try this one. Tom Sawyer. Now this other one. I wonder what that is.
Ain't that bulldog drumming, please?
Well, tell the operator that these films are to go back to the...
Oh, excuse me, please. There's a man here to see you. He says he's a magician.
Oh, swell. I'll put him on next to that soprano. Maybe he'll saw her in half. What you want, bud?
Bonjour, monsieur. Okay. I am with Zardo the Great. I make the magic trick, the great illusion. I wave the magic wand and poof! I make the elephant disappear.
What do you mean you make the elephant disappear? It's been gone since 1932. How long is your act, bud?
Monsieur, I have the most marvelous trick, which is take but 20 minutes.
Good. What is it? A disappearing act?
Oui. I can make the dull floors disappear with Johnson's glow coat so that in only 20 minutes they're dry and shining like new. Well, you never saw such a marvelous...
Marco! Shush. What's the idea of always trying to sneak in with them commercials? Why don't you come right out and say that Johnson's Glow Coat is the finest no-rubbing floor polish that money can buy?
Fibber, shush. Say, where's the telephone booth?
The other side of the lobby, Harpo. Just push the usher aside and he'll give you a slug.
Okay.
Say, Fibber, what's the idea of keeping me waiting?
Oh, Clark Dennis. I'm sorry, Clark. What was it you wanted?
I want a job singing at this theater. How about it?
Well, I don't know, Clark. It might be a big idea, but I'll have to know more about your experience. Where were you born?
Flint, Michigan. They used to call me the Flint Flash.
Sounds like a cigarette lighter. No wonder you don't work very often. Well, what would you like to sing?
I fall in love with you every day.
Go ahead, Clark.
Dennis, the Flint Flash, singing I Fall in Love with You Every Day. Nice falling, Clark. I think I can arrange it.
Excuse me, please. There's a Adagio dancer out there waiting to see you.
Oh, dancer, eh?
Yes.
Well, tag him in here, Phil.
Yes, sir. Come in, please.
Hello there, Johnny! You the manager again this week?
You bet, you old-timer. What's on your mind?
Ever book any Adagio acts, Johnny?
You mean them kind of acts where two guys throw a gal across the stage at each other? Yeah, I think we...
Well, me and my wife and another fella got an act. Want to try us out?
Oh, I don't know, old-timer. You don't seem to be in very good
health. Hey!
How much you want?
Oh, we ain't fussy, Johnny. Other fella and me won't kick, and it's a toss-up with my wife.
Well, it ain't every married man gets paid for throwing his wife around.
Well, that's pretty good, Johnny. But that ain't the way I heard it. The way I heard it, one feller says to the other feller, "Say," he says, "you've been reading about the wage and hour bill?" And the other feller says, "Yes, but I don't understand it." And the first feller says, "Well, ain't you heard of the wages of sin?" And the other feller says, "Yes, I know about the wages, but what are the hours?"
Well, never mind that there, bud. How about this adagio act?
Hey!
I says, how about your adagio act?
Shucks, Johnny, I ain't got any act. I just come in here to pull a joke. You knew that.
I guess I'm taking this business too seriously. I'm beginning to believe it myself. Maybe I'd better...
Hello there, Fibber, old boy. Meet Miss Winkler of Wilcox and Winkler. Boy, we got a great act now. Song and dance. Marvelous routine.
Oh, hi, Miss Winkler.
Oh, hello, Mr. McGee. Mr. Wilcox was telling me you didn't like his magician stuff, so we worked up a terrific song and dance act.
I'll say we did. All new stuff. Great gags. And watch us dance. Come on, let's go, baby. Piano.
While strolling through the park one day, we heard a little housewife say...
Well, Fibber, didn't you think I was kind of cute?
No, it ain't bad, but I got another verse for you. I was strolling in the park that day, and if you listened, you could hear me say, in spite of Johnson's wax, I don't like your lousy act, so go away, go away, go away, go away, go away. Hey, Phil.
Yes, sir.
How about that gal that came in to hear Clark Dennis sing?
Well, I've done just what you told me to, please.
Oh, you put her in a box?
Yes, sir, but you forgot to tell me where I have to send her to.
Listen, Phil, when you talk...
Hey, Fibber.
Huh?
How about if we play Kiss Me Again for the next intermission?
Kiss Me Again? How does it go?
Show 'em, boys. Kiss Me Again.
No. Please, Billy. Gee whiz. Don't you know the public is tired of that old-fashioned stuff?
What's the matter with it?
Why, that's the way everybody else does.
Oh, you think I'm a mimic?
Well, you do look a little peaked, but here. I'll tell you what you do, Billy. You leave them orchestrations here with me, and I'll fix them up. I'll show you what really can be done with that there number there.
But you don't know anything about writing musical arrangements.
Well, what of it? I got intelligence, ain't I? Ain't I? Well, I can do it all right. What else you got, Billy, to play?
How about it's wonderful?
Swell.
anybody else wants to see me, tell them I'm busy working on this here musical arrangement.
Yes, sir, but Mr. DePopulos is here, sir.
Well, tell that guy I'm sorry, but I haven't got time.
Hello, Peter.
Oh, sorry.
I know I'm never too busy to see you, so I told me to come right in.
Well, if you'll excuse me now, Nick, I got a musical arrangement I got to write, so I won't have
time. Oh, that is ugly duckly, Peter. I'm just getting home from the church down hills where I'm seeing the Kentucky Derby.
The Kentucky Derby, you mean, Nick?
Sure. And believe me, Fizzer, it was being a wonderful pair of spectacles, too. I'm having myself so many mint tulips that I'm feeling like a Kentucky nut, I'm thinking.
You mean a Kentucky colonel? A lot of important people go to see that race, Nick. I tried to get down there myself, but I couldn't.
Fizzer, there is being so many famous people at these races, I can hardly believe my faith. I'm seeing James Aloysius Farley.
Hey, how'd you know it was Jim Farley?
Because I'm hearing a pronouncer saying over the speak louder, the horses are leading the post office. What horses were you liking for the Kentucky Derby, Fizzer?
Oh, I don't know, Nick. Frankly, I fancied Fighting Fox.
I'm liking a Frightened Fox, too, Fizzer. I'm putting $100 on his nose, which is maybe being why he's not running good.
What's mean?
Maybe he's not breathing through all those money.
That wolf horse, Lauren, from Kansas City, was pretty good, wasn't he?
Oh, sure, Fizzer. It is looking like a wolf is beating a fox any days in my week. And then there is a horse which is being named the Catch Manow, and a bull with a flea, and a dobbers. But when they are coming into the home street, they are making it a photograph finish. And Frightened Fox is being in the negative. Drive along, Peter.
Well, shall I say, I got to get this musical arrangement of Kiss Me Again. Got it about all set here. Just a little work to do. Now, don't let anybody bother me. Let's see now. Da 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 da. Two bars tacit for the zither. Up to the cadenza. Down again. Segway into the second coda. Da 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 da. Pay off that last note. There, that fixes it, Phil. All set.
Hello there, McGee. And how's everything?
Oh, it's Mr. Silverscreen. Hi, Silverscreen. Silverscreen, this is my assistant, Philly Watson. Phil, this is Mr. Silverscreen, the owner of the theater. Phil, meet Silverscreen.
Give it this, sir. I didn't quite catch the name.
Silverscreen, my boy, Silverscreen. Well, McGee, what are you working on there?
It's a new musical arrangement, Chief. I'm going to show Billy Mills, our orchestra leader, just what Victor Herbert meant when he wrote this number.
Well, I didn't know you was a musician, McGee.
Who, me? Why? Shut, Silverscreen. I always been musical. Studied the classics ever since I was a kid. Why, I used to make a trip to Germany every year. Sort of a pilgrimage to lay a wreath on the beer of Johann Bach. Bach Beer McGee, I was known as in them days.
Here I come again.
Bach Beer McGee, bound to the big boys like Bach, Brahms, and Beethoven, but being a brilliant bucko myself at building big bands and barnstorming box offices, better than Billy Mills at blowing the blues and belting the blazes out of a Berlin ballad or booting a bit of Debussy, and Valley Holder's the baron of beautiful barbaric babble from the back rooms of Boston's beer bars to the banjo-banging boys beside the bayous of balmy Birmingham. Now, if you'll come down into the theater, I'll have the boys play my arrangement for you, Silverscreen. We'll be back in a few minutes, Phil.
That's okay, Mr. McGee.
Now, the way I figured out is this way, Chief. I figured that our audiences is entitled to the best. So I thought I'd show what could be did in this theater with some well-known musical composition like, sit down there, Silverscreen, and get a load of this. All right, boys. Ein, zwei, kiss me again.
Thank you. Well, Silver Screen, how was it? Wasn't that the most terrific? What's the matter, bud? Didn't you like it?
I never heard such a...
I knew you'd like it, Chief. But just you wait. Wait till you see some of my other arrangements.
Don't bother with it, McGee. Huh? I've made other arrangements myself.
You have?
Yeah, I'm getting a new manager tomorrow. You're fired!
You mean... Oh, sure.
What are you going to do now, Fleecer? You lost your job again.
Oh, I don't know, Silver. I guess if industry can get along without me, I can get along without industry.
Yes, sir. You always have.
Good night, folks. Good night, Molly.
This is Harlow Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and Glow Coat, Racine, Wisconsin, inviting you all to join us again next Tuesday night at the same time. Good night.
Among the musical items included on tonight's show were I Fall in Love with You Every Day from College Swing and An Old Straw Hat from Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
And sometimes things can get rather silly, but one thing's for sure, Phil Mack will guide you through and try to leave you feeling giddy and try to leave you feeling happy. Thematic, thematic. Heard on Wednesdays from 12 to 4. Thematic, thematic.
Interviews and classics and
so much more. Thematic, thematic, thematic.
Woo-hoo! Catch Thematic every Wednesday from 12 to 4 p.m. Nerd.
Let's be honest. The National Symphony may not be in his future, but he wanted to try violin. So you said yes because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more about keeping your kids safe in your vehicle at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show him you love him. Keep him safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
From Hollywood, Colgate Tooth Powder presents The Mel Blanc Show, written by Mac Benoff, with Mary Jane Croft, Joe Kearns, Hans Conried, Alan Reed, the Sportsman, Victor Miller and his orchestra, and starring the creator of the voice of Bugs Bunny.
What's up, Doc?
Yes, Colgate Tooth Powder, for a breath that's sweet and teeth that sparkle, brings you The Mel Blanc Show, with Mel playing his new character, Zookie.
Hello, everybody. Hello, everybody. Hi.
And starring himself in person, Mel Blanc.
Hiya, folks.
Proof that a young swain has fallen in love with his lady fair is when he begins to see in her the close features of his family. For instance, in the little town where Mel Blanc lives, we hear Henry Adams saying to his girlfriend Susan,
"Gosh, Susan, you're awfully pretty. You look just like my sister."
And in another part of town, Roy Davis is saying to his girl,
"You know, Shirley, you're lovely. You look just as my mother did when she was your age."
And in the Colby house, where Mel Blanc is sitting with his girlfriend, Betty, Mel is saying,
"Gosh, Betty, you're very pretty. You look just like my uncle."
Last week, Mel, in an attempt to save the Colby family from eviction, pretended he was a Viennese doctor. However, the plan didn't work, and now we find Mel and Betty in Mel's fix-it shop talking about the incident.
"Gosh, everything was going fine, too.
Until the other doctor asked you where you studied.
Yeah, and all I could think of was Prinyavitenfluten gluten in Salzburg.
If only you hadn't said Prinyavitenfluten gluten.
Can you imagine that guy never heard of a place called Salzburg? Oh, by the way, Betty, I got a circular in the mail that your father might be interested in. Here it is.
Oh, prefabricated housing. What does it say?
Buy the Cracker Jack prefabricated house. Small, inconvenient, and poorly constructed. This is the ideal type of housing for veterans.
It's all right for you to joke, but Father and I'll be living out in the street if something doesn't happen. Or maybe even a cellar.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's wonderful, living in a cellar?
Sure, your father's always throwing me down the steps. Now let's see him try and throw me up.
Stop talking like that. You know, Father's beginning to like you. Why, just last night I heard him say, Mel, you can hang around the house all you want to.
Yeah, but you didn't see him pointing to the rafter. Speaking of the... here comes your father now.
Hello, Betty.
Hello, Father.
Mel Blanc, you idiot.
Hello, Mr. Colby.
I gave you a cash register to fix for my supermarket, and what did you do?
Oh, I meant to ask you, Mr. Colby. I'm missing a few parts from an old slot machine.
I know that, you nincompoop. This morning, my cashier tried to ring up $1.20.
Well, what happened?
He got three cherries straight across.
Gee, that's too bad.
That's terrible. The next customer hit the jackpot. Oh, but I can't be angry today. The bank is giving me a big loan. I'll be able to buy our house and we won't be evicted.
Father, that's wonderful.
Yes, that is it. If everything goes well when Banker Grimes comes to the house tonight... I think I can impress Banker Grimes, and Betty can make a good impression on him, and you, Mel, can make a good impression, too.
You really think so, Mr. Colby?
Yes, on the sidewalk, if you don't stay away from my house.
All right, Mr. Colby, I can take a hint, and I won't... Hey, wait a minute. Banker Grimes is a very social man. He'd be very impressed if you had some rich foreign relatives.
I don't have any rich foreign relatives.
You do now. I'm a good actor. I can do it.
Huh?
I'll be your rich foreign relative.
You mean you...
You want the house?
Well, yeah.
Well, you want to live in the street?
That's a deal. Well, Mel, that's what I call quick thinking. I'll do anything to get that loan.
Oh, wait a minute. Here comes Professor Pochnik. Oh, hello, Professor Pochnik.
Hello. Hello. Well, if it ain't my four best friends, Mel, Betty, and Mr. Colby.
And Professor Pochnik, that's only three.
What am I, an enemy?
Well, we have to go, Professor Pochnik. Nice to have seen you. Come on, Betty. See you at 9, cousin.
Mel, why are you looking so down-faced for? Why?
Oh, I'm always talking out of turn. Professor, I'm afraid I promised Mr. Colby the impossible.
Mel, there is no such word in the dictionary like impossible. Impossible, that's a bad word. Forget it. Could be, that is a word. Que, u, a, la, de, be, a. Could be.
Oh, but this is really impossible.
I just told you there is no such word. You couldn't use it. Don't even think about the impossible. Now, what is the trouble?
Well, I'm going to help Mr. Colby get a loan from Banker Grimes. So I got to make believe I'm some foreign relative who is rich and high class.
That is impossible. However, under Professor Pochnik's dramatic course, the impossible becomes could be. Now, I have two courses of teaching. The first is in 10 easy lessons.
And the other course?
One hard lesson. We try the hard one. Now, first, we are impersonating a tough guy. You listen, wise guy, see? From whom you getting your vodka, from whom, huh? See? Now, you do it.
Okay.
Give a listen, wise guy, see? From whom you're getting your vodka, from whom, huh? See? Huh? That's perfect. Now we try another type, the Western type.
Western?
Yes. Coming here, tax you all. I'm reckoning the hanker to fixing up that old corral. Give a yippee-hi-yay of a home on the gas ray. Take it, Pod. Pod. Mel, that's you. Pod is Western talk for rustler.
Oh, all right.
Coming here, tax you all.
Oh, wait a minute, Professor. This is all American.
Well, frankly, Mel, on farmers, I am not so good. But for you, I am trying. Now, make believe you are a count. The first thing you do is bow from the waist. Bow from the waist. Bow from the waist.
I hope I do all right. Bow from the waist. I can't wait till tonight. Bow from the waist. Booster from the waist.
now, the sportsman Victor Miller and his orchestra with My Pretty Girl. Mr. Colby obtain a loan, Mel has promised to impersonate some rich foreign relatives, thereby hoping to impress Banker Grimes. Mel has left the fix-it shop to get the costumes he'll need. Meanwhile, the shop is in charge of his assistant, Zookie, who is now fixing a radio.
Gee, what a big radio. Hmm. It must be at least 9 to 2 inches. 8 to 2 inches. 6 to 2 inches. Crystal said. Oh, gee, it's got an automatic record. It plays one record at a time. Now, let me stop.
Zookie, stay away from that radio. Look, Zookie, help me get into this costume. I got... Uh-oh. It's Mr. Cushing, my lodge president.
Hello, man.
Well, greetings, mighty potentate. Ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo-ugga. What's the matter, mighty potentate? You look like you haven't slept a wink.
Well, Mel, last night I had a terrible nightmare for 4 hours.
And then you woke up?
No, then I went to sleep. My wife turned on the other side. Yeah, the way that woman snores. Sounds like the last dregs of a seltzer bottle. Now I know why Richard won't open that door.
Why don't you try using a clothespin?
I did, Mel, but I couldn't squeeze her neck into that little opening.
Say, how'd you ever come to meet your wife, mighty potentate?
Well, I'll tell you, Mel, it was a blind date. I'll never forget the first thing I said when I first saw her.
What was that?
Ah!
I get it. She was a scream, huh? Well, wasn't she insulted when you did that?
Oh, no, no. She'd been out on blind dates before. In fact, with her, a groan was a compliment.
You still didn't have to marry her, did you?
Well, Mel, it was a rebound thing, you see. I'd been going out with another girl. Oh, I'll never forget her. Every night I used to whisper in her ear, Gwendolyn, I adore you. Gwendolyn, you're my dream girl. Gwendolyn, I'm mad about you. But she left me because of one slight mistake.
What was that?
Her name was Emma. Well, I don't know why I'm standing here telling you all this. Just arrived out of nowhere to talk to.
No, I know just how you feel, mighty potentate. If I don't help Mr. Colby impress Banker Grimes tonight, the Colbys may move and I may lose Betty.
Lucky boy.
Well, don't joke, Mr. Cushing. Would you want to be single all your life?
Ha! Well, I've got to be going now. I hope everything turns up all right at the Colby House.
Well, thanks. Where are you going?
Well, I can do one of two things. I can go to the movies and see Duel in the Sun, or I can go home and fight in the shade.
Well, have a good time at the movies. Well, goodbye, Mighty Potentate. Ugga, ugga, boo, ugga, boo, boo, ugga.
So long, Mel. Ugga, ugga, boo, ugga, boo, boo.
Well, now to get over to the Colby House with these costumes. Gosh, it's going to be quite a job impersonating a bunch of rich foreign relatives.
Well, Betty, everything's going along fine.
Yes, Father, and Mel should be here any minute.
And if he does a good job of that foreign relative stuff, it should cinch the deal.
Oh, leave it to Mel, Father.
Well, Mr. Grimes, did you enjoy the dinner?
Ah, it was delicious. Of course, you didn't have to go to the trouble of baking a cake and having the icing spell out $8,000. I got the point when the alphabet soup spelled out police.
Now, about the loan, Mr. Grimes. Have a cigar.
Well, now, Mr. Colby, I think the loan will go through.
A cigar? I take the whole box.
Well, there's just one point that we have to clear up.
Well, go on, have a cigar.
But I think we can overcome the point and get your hands up that box. The question I want to ask you, Mr. Colby, is, do you intend to take a trip outside the country?
Why, no. What makes you ask that?
Well, now, we had an unfortunate experience. We made a $10,000 loan to a handkerchief manufacturer. Now, we don't know whether or not it was the nature of the business.
Why, what happened?
In 6 months, he blew.
He blew.
industry jokes. Seems that he had a cousin in Ecuador, and now that's where he absconded. Now, I hope you don't have any relatives outside the country.
Oh, no, of course not. Bonsoir, cousin Cole. Oh, it's just the French dry cleaners. Now, about the loan, Mr. Grimes.
I'll open it this time.
I kiss you on both cheeks.
You stop that.
Oh, excuse me.
What's going on here?
I am Monsieur Colby's cousin.
His cousin?
Oui. Cousin Colby, when are you coming to visit with us? We are dying to see you. Cousin Colby, talk to me. Cousin Colby, stop sharpening that razor.
Pardon me, what part of France are you from?
London.
London is in England.
Madrid?
Madrid is in Spain.
Where is Pomona?
Are you sure that you are a Frenchman?
Oh, you do not believe me. I show you. I roll up my pants leg. Voila, what you see?
A garter.
What it says on the garter?
Paris.
That proves I am a Frenchman.
Well, now, in that case, you'll surely understand what I'm saying. Je ne sais quoi, voulez-vous, parlez-vous, vous, français?
Well, goodbye, Cousin Colby. The boat is leaving.
Mr. Colby, I don't like this. I thought you had no relatives outside the country.
Now, Mr. Grimes, I can explain everything. Please excuse me just a minute. Oh, Betty.
Yes, Father.
Betty, we can't tell Mr. Grimes. We've tried to deceive him, but we must stop Mel.
Oh, I'll try, Father.
Is this where Senor Colby lives?
I have no relatives in South America.
Oh, but Cousin Colby, remember what we made up. I mean, how our families made up.
Pardon me, are you one of Mr. Colby's South American relatives?
See, I am a very rich bullfighter. I remember the last fight. We are in the middle of the arena. I look at the bull look at me. I look at the bull look at me. I look at the bull look at me. You want to know something? The bull is better looking than me.
What part of South America are you from?
Colombia.
What part of Colombia?
Eastern Colombia.
Whereabouts?
Broadway at night. Cousin Colby. Cousin Colby, I know you haven't seen me in 10 years, but put me down.
All right.
First, take me back inside the window.
Colby, is that a way to treat a relative of yours? Now I want to talk to him. Sit him down, wine him, and dine him.
I think I go now.
Why?
You said wine me, dine me. Cousin Colby looks like he wants to shave me. So long.
Colby, there's something highly irregular about this.
Now, please, Mr. Grimes, have a cigar. I never saw these relatives before.
What did you say, Mr. Colby?
You'd have a relative. I never saw these cigars before.
Tovarich, Colby. Granny Strebdevayich, Latuka, Spafoynia, Prozdoya, and regards from Uncle Patrick.
Another relative?
That's right, Kiro. I haven't seen Uncle Colby for 10 years. Let's eat.
You haven't seen him for 10 years, and the first thing you want to do is eat?
That's right. Borscht is thicker than blood.
Now you interest me very much. I've always wanted to obtain the first-hand information about the USSR.
USSR? Oh, I get it. That's Russia spelled backwards.
I've always been very interested in the Russian experiment.
What do you mean, experiment? I had a mother and father just like you did.
Yes. Now, just what did you do in Russia?
Me? I'm the greatest actor in Moscow. I play gangster parts. Listen. You listen to wise guy, see? From whom you getting your vodka from whom, huh? See? Whom, huh? Whom? Oh, I was wonderful. Our great critic, Yasha Fiddler, he gave me the highest award. 4 bulgas and a boatman.
Now, this has gone far enough, Mr. Colby. And what I've seen tonight is enough. You're not getting any loan from my bank.
Oh, then give me back my cigar.
And for making a fool out of me, I'm going to break every cigar in this box.
Did you hear that, Mr. Colby?
Yes, and for making a fool out of me, Mel Blanc, I'm going to break every bone in your box.
So, Banker Grimes gave Mr. Colby the loan, and now your girl Betty won't have to leave town. Mel, that's wonderful.
Yes, Professor Pochnik, for a minute I thought I was going to be killed.
Well, what saved you?
Well, Mr. Grimes turned out to be an amateur actor himself, and he enjoyed my performance.
A Pochnik pupil pleases people. And now you want that I should act out the gangster again, huh?
Yeah.
All right. You a listen, wise guy, see? From who you getting your vodka, from who, huh? See?
Fine. Well, is that what you wanted to learn, Mr. Grimes?
Yes, Mel, I'll see if I have it right. Give a listen, wise guy, see? From who you getting your vodka, from who, ha, ha. Mel Blanc will be back in just a minute.
This is Mel Blanc saying thanks for listening. Good night, and
that's all, folks.
This is Bud Easton reminding you that Colgate tooth powder for a breath of sweet and teeth that sparkle brings you the Mel Blanc Show every Tuesday at this time. Be sure to join us again next Tuesday night for more fun with Mel and the people you'll meet in Mel Blanc's Fix-It Shop. Ladies, now more and more fats and oils are needed to make more and more of the things we need so badly. Your butcher pays you a high price for every pound of waste fat you take to him. So do fill it in and turn it in. Remember, Mel Blanc at the same time every Tuesday night. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
All right, there's a show you probably haven't heard before. Maybe, maybe you have, but probably not. From January 21st of 47, Mel Blanc Show. Of course, as we've mentioned, Mel Blanc, the voice of a bunch of different cartoon characters like Porky Pig and Bugs Bunny. And he had his own radio show for about a year or so. And also today, earlier in the hour, we heard Fibber McGee and Company from during a period when Molly was sick. That show was from 1938. And that is just about going to wrap up what we do on Tuesday. That is, we bring shows that were actually on the radio before you and I were around, certainly. Perhaps our parents or grandparents listened to these shows for a while, anyway, until television overtook the home entertainment's source. One o'clock, we have got Classical 24. Don't forget, if you like mysteries and adventures and the occasional spooky show when the time is right, we do that on Sunday night between 9 p.m. and 12 midnight. Often shows to dim the lights to. And we follow the White Rabbit and his incredibly interesting program called Hot Wax Radio. That's just before WHFR's Sunday Night Mysteries. So with that, we're going to invite you to join us in another week for more of classic comedy, variety and light drama every Tuesday night between 10 in the morning and 1 o'clock. Have yourself a good warm day, and we'll catch you on the flip side. See ya.
Hugo Mike Holloway. And if you're yearning and burning for some boogie rock, baby, that's what I got on the Go With The Flow Mike Holloway Show every Friday, 4 to 6 p.m. on WHFR.FM, the station that...
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project, so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines.
Thank you for listening to this lovely classical programming. Hope you're enjoying it as much as we enjoy presenting it to you. You know what else we enjoy? Celebrating Henry Ford College and all that it offers to our community. If you're looking for a career-focused, job-ready degree program or certificate, or guaranteed transfer pathways to the nation's best universities, well, you found us right here at Henry Ford College. Simply go to hfcc.edu. That's the website, hfcc.edu, to learn more about our Certificate of Achievements, one-year programs, two-year and even four-year degree opportunities. We are Henry Ford College. We are future-driven, and we are here for our community. More information, again, it's just as simple as hfcc.edu. Thank you.